Onward the wind traveled across the gray-green River Erinnin, healing ships that still carried trade north and south, for there had to be trade even in these days, though none could be sure where it was safe to trade. East of the river, the forests began to thin, giving way eventually to low rolling hills covered in brown, tinder-dry grass and dotted sparsely with small clumps of trees. Atop one of those hills stood a circle of wagons, many with the canvas scorched or else completely burned away from the iron hoops. On a makeshift flagstaff, trimmed from a young tree, dead in the drought, and lashed to a bare wagon hoop for more height, waved a crimson banner, a black and white disk in its heart. The Banner of Light, some called it, or Althor's Banner. Others had darker names, and shivered as they spoke them in whispers. The wind shook the banner hard, and was gone quickly, as if glad to be away. Perrin Ibarra sat on the ground with his broad back against a wagon wheel, wishing the wind lingered. It had been cooler for a moment, and the wind from the south had cleared the scent of death from his nostrils, a scent that reminded him where he was supposed to be, the last place he wanted to be. Much better here, inside the wagon circle, his back to the north, where he could forget after a fashion. The surviving wagons had been hauled up to the hilltop yesterday in the afternoon, once men could find strength to do more than thank the light they still breathed. Now the sun climbed again, and the heat with it. Irritably, he scratched at his short, curly beard. The more he sweated, the more it itched. Sweat rolled down the face of every man he could see, except the Aiel, and water lay nearly a mile away to the north now. But so did the horrors and the smells. Most considered it a fair trade. He should have been doing his duty, yet the touch of guilt did not move him. Today was High Chazaleen, and back home in the Two Rivers there would be feasting all day and dancing all night. The day of reflection, when you were supposed to remember all the good things in your life, and anyone who voiced a complaint could find a bucket of water upended over his head to wash away bad luck. Not something anybody wanted when the weather was cold, as it should be. A bucket of water would be a pleasure now. For a man lucky to be alive, he found it remarkably hard to pull up any good thoughts. He had learned things about himself yesterday, or maybe it had been this morning, after it was all done. He could sense a few of the wolves still, a handful of those that survived, and were now on their way elsewhere, far from here, far from men. The wolves were still the talk of the camp, uneasy speculation over where they had appeared from and why. A few believed Rand had called them. Most thought the Aes Sedai had. The Aes Sedai did not say what they thought. No blame came from the wolves. What had happened had happened. But he could not match their fatalism. They had come because he called them. Shoulders wide enough to make him seem shorter than he was slumped under the weight of responsibility. Now and then he heard other wolves that had not come, speak with scorn to those that had. This was what came of mixing with the two legs. Nothing else could be expected. It was a strain to keep his thoughts to himself. He wanted to be home in the Two Rivers. Small chance of that, perhaps ever again. He wanted to howl that the scornful ones were right. He wanted to be with his wife anywhere at all, and everything the way it was before, the chances of which seemed little better, maybe worse. Far more than the yearning for home, more even than the wolves, worry about Fael ate inside him like a ferret trying to burrow out of his middle. She had actually seemed glad to see him leave Cairhien. What was he to do about her? He could not think of words to describe how much he loved his wife and needed her, but she was jealous where she had no cause, hurt where he had done nothing, angry where he could not see why. He must do something, but what? The answer eluded him. Careful thought was all he had, while Fael was flashing quicksilver. "The Aiel should put some clothes on them," Aram muttered primly, scowling at the ground. He squatted nearby, patiently holding the reins of a rangy gray gelding. He seldom went far from Perrin. The sword strapped to his back jarred with his green-striped tinker coat, hanging undone for the heat. A rolled kerchief tied around his forehead kept sweat from his eyes. Once Perrin had thought him almost too good-looking for a man. A bleak darkness had settled in him, though, and now he wore a scowl as often as not. "It isn't decent, Lord Perrin." Perrin put aside thoughts of Fael reluctantly. With time, he could puzzle it out. He had to, somehow. "It is their way, Aram." Aram grimaced, as if he might spit. "Well, it isn't a decent way. It keeps them under control, I suppose. Nobody would run far and make trouble like that. But it isn't decent." There were Aiel all over the place, of course. Tall, aloof men in grays and browns and greens, their only bit of color the scarlet strip of cloth tied around their temples, with the black and white disk on their foreheads. Siswayaman, they called themselves. Sometimes that word tickled the edge of his memory like a word he should know. Ask one of the Aielmen, and he looked as if you had babbled nonsense. But then they ignored the strips of cloth, too. No maiden of the spear wore the scarlet headband. Whether white-haired or looking barely old enough to leave her mother, every maiden stalked about giving the Siswayaman challenging stares that seemed somehow self-satisfied, while the men looked back flat-eyed, with a smell almost of hunger, a matter of jealousy by the scent of all of them, though over what Perrin could not begin to imagine. Whatever it was not new, and it did not seem likely to come to blows. A few of the wise ones were inside the wagons as well, in bulky skirts and white blouses, wearing their dark shawls in defiance of the heat, glittering bracelets and necklaces of gold and ivory making up for the plainness of the rest of their clothes. Some appeared amused by the maidens and the Siswayaman, and others exasperated. All of them, wise ones, maidens, and Siswayaman, ignored the Shido the way Perrin would of a stool or a rug. The Aiel had taken 200 or so Shido prisoners yesterday, men and maidens, not many considering the numbers involved, and they moved about freely, in a manner of speaking. Perrin would have been a lot more comfortable had they been guarded and clothed. Instead, they fetched water and ran errands, naked as the day they were born. With other Aiel, they were meek as mice. Anyone else received a proudly defiant stare for noticing them. Perrin was not the only one who tried not to notice them, and Aram not the only one to mutter. A good many of the Two Rivers men in camp did one or both. A good many of the Karayenen nearly had apoplexy whenever they saw one of the Shido. The Mayeners just shook their heads as though it were all a joke, and ogled the women. They had as little shame as the Aiel, the Mayeners. "Gaul explained it to me, Aram. You know what a gaishin is, don't you? About Jiato, and serving a year and a day, and all that?" The other man nodded, which was a good thing. Perrin did not know much himself. Gaul's explanations of Aiel ways often left him more confused. Gaul always thought it all self-evident. "Well, gaishin aren't allowed to wear anything one of the Al-Gaid Siswai might wear. That means spear fighters," he added at Aram's questioning frown. Suddenly he realized he was looking straight at one of the Shido as she trotted in his general direction, a tall young woman, golden-haired and pretty despite a long, thin scar down her cheek and other scars elsewhere. Very pretty, and very naked. Clearing his throat roughly, he pulled his eyes away. He could feel his face heating. "Anyway, that is why they are the way they are. Gaishin wear white robes, and they don't have any here. It's just their way."
Burn Gaul and burn his explanations, he thought. They could cover them with something.
"Perrin Golden Eyes," said a woman's voice. "Karahwin sends to know whether you wish water." Aram's face went purple, and he jerked himself around in his squat, presenting his back to her. "No, thank you." Perrin did not need to look up to know it was the golden-haired Shido woman. He kept peering off at nothing in another direction. Aiel had a peculiar sense of humor, and maidens of the spear—Karahwin was a maiden—had the most peculiar.
They had quickly seen how the wetlanders reacted to the Shido. They would have needed to be blind not to. And suddenly Guy Shine were being sent to wetlanders left and right, and Aiel all but rolling on the ground at the blushes and stammers, and even the shouting. He was sure that Carawin and her friends were watching now. This was at least the 10th time one of the Guy Shine women had been sent to ask him whether he wanted water or had a spare whetstone, or some such bloody fool thing. Abruptly, a thought struck him. The Mayenners were seldom bothered this way. A handful of Karienin plainly enjoyed looking, if not so openly as the Mayenners, and some of the older Two Rivers men, who should have known better. The point was, none of them had had a second spurious message that he knew of. Those who reacted the most, on the other hand, Karienin, who had shouted the loudest about indecency, and two or three of the younger Two Rivers men, who stammered and blushed so hard they looked ready to melt, had been pestered until they fled the wagons entirely. With an effort, Perrin looked up at the Guy Shine's face, at her eyes. Focus on her eyes, he thought frantically. They were green and large and not at all meek. Her scent was pure fury. Thank Carawin for me, and tell her you could oil my spare saddle if she doesn't mind. And I don't have a clean shirt. If she wouldn't mind you doing some laundry.
She will not mind, the woman said in a tight voice, then turned and trotted off.
Perrin whipped his eyes away, though the image did stay in his head.
Light Aram was right, but with luck, he might just have stopped any more visitations. He would have to point this out to Aram and the Two Rivers men.
Maybe the Karienin would listen, too.
What are we going to do about them, Lord Perrin?
Still looking away, Aram no longer spoke of Guy Shine. That is Rand's to decide, Perrin said slowly, satisfaction fading. It might be odd to think of people wandering about naked as a small problem, but this was definitely a bigger. And one he had been avoiding as hard as he had what lay to the north. On the far side of the wagon circle, nearly 2 dozen women sat on the ground. All well-dressed for travel, many wore silk, most with light linen dust cloaks, but not a bead of sweat showed on any face. 3 appeared young enough that he might have asked them for a dance before he married Fael.
If they weren't Aes Sedai, anyway, he thought wryly.
Once he had danced with an Aes Sedai and nearly swallowed his tongue when he realized who he swung about. And she had been a friend, if that word applied to Aes Sedai.
How new does an Aes Sedai have to be for me to put an age to her?
The others looked ageless, of course. Maybe in their 20s, maybe their 40s, changing from one glance to the next, always uncertain. That was what their faces said, though several showed gray in their hair. You just could not tell with Aes Sedai. About anything.
At least those are no danger anymore, Aram said, jerking his head toward 3 of the sisters, a little apart from the rest.
One wept, face on her knees. The other 2 stared haggardly at nothing, one of them plucking aimlessly at her skirt. They had been much the same since yesterday. At least none was screaming any longer. If Perrin had the straight of it, which he was not sure he did, they had been stilled somehow when Rand broke free. They would never channel the One Power again. To Aes Sedai, it was probably better to be dead. He would have expected the other Aes Sedai to comfort them, care for them somehow, but most ignored the 3 entirely, although a little too studied in looking anywhere and everywhere else. For that matter, the stilled Aes Sedai refused to acknowledge the rest either. In the beginning, at least, a few of the other sisters had approached, each by herself, calm to the eye, yet smelling sharply of aversion and reluctance. But they got nothing for their pains, not word or glance. None had gone near this morning. Perrin shook his head. The Aes Sedai seemed to do a lot of ignoring of what they did not want to admit. For instance, the black-coated men standing over them. There was an Ashaman for each sister, even the 3 who had been stilled, and they never seemed to blink. For their part, the Aes Sedai looked past the Ashaman, or through them. They might as well not have existed. It was quite a trick. He could not make himself disregard the Ashaman, and he was not under their guard. They ranged from fuzz-cheeked boys to gray-haired, balding gansers. And it was not their grim, high-collared black coats or the sword each wore at his hip that made them dangerous. Every Ashaman could channel, and somehow they were keeping the Aes Sedai from channeling. Men who could wield the one power, a thing of nightmares. Rand could, of course, but he was Rand, and the dragon reborn besides. These fellows made Perrin's hackles rise. The captive Aes Sedai's surviving warders sat some distance off, under their own guard. 30 or so of Lord Dobrain's armsmen in bell-shaped Kyrianan helmets, and as many Mayenner-winged guards in red breastplates, each sharp-eyed as if guarding leopards. A good attitude under the circumstances. More warders than there were Aes Sedai. A number of the prisoners were Green Aja, apparently. More guards than warders, a good many more, and maybe few enough at that. "The lights send we don't see any more grief from that lot," Perrin muttered. Twice during the night the warders had tried to break free. In truth, those outbreaks had been suppressed more by the Ashaman than by the Kyrianan or Mayenners, and they had not been gentle. None of the warders had been killed, but at least a dozen nursed broken bones none of the sisters had yet been allowed to heal.
"If the Lord Dragon cannot make the decision," Aram said quietly, "maybe it should be made by somebody else, to protect him."
Perrin gave him a sidelong look. "What decision?" "The sisters told them not to make another attempt, and they'll obey their Aes Sedai." Broken bones or no, unarmed as they were, hands tied behind their backs, the warders still looked like a wolf pack awaiting the lead wolf's command to attack. None would rest easy until his Aes Sedai was free. Maybe until all of the sisters were free. Aes Sedai and warders. A stack of well-aged oak ready for a flame. But even warders and Aes Sedai had proved no match for Ashaman.
"I did not mean the warders."
Aram hesitated, then shuffled closer to Perrin and lowered his voice further, to a hoarse whisper.
"The Aes Sedai kidnapped the Lord Dragon. He can't trust them, not ever. But he won't do what he has to, either. If they died before he knew it..."
"What are you saying?" Perrin almost choked as he sat bolt upright. Not for the first time he wondered whether there was any tinker left in the other man.
"They're helpless, Aram. Helpless women."
"They are Aes Sedai."
Dark eyes met Perrin's golden stare levelly.
"They cannot be trusted, and they cannot be turned loose. How long can Aes Sedai be held against their will? They've been doing what they do far longer than the Ashaman. They must know more. They're a danger to the Lord Dragon and to you, Lord Perrin. I have seen them look at you."
Across the wagon circle, the sisters were talking among themselves in whispers even Perrin could not hear, mouths held close to ears. Now and again one did look at him and Aram. At him. Not Aram. He had caught a double handful of names, Nisun Behara, Arian Barolios, and Katarin Arudin, Coiran Saildane, Sarin Nemdal, and Elza Penfell, Janine Pavlara, Beldine Nairam, Merith Riven. Those last were the young sisters, but young or ageless, they watched him with faces so serene, it seemed they had the upper hand despite the Ashaman. Defeating Aes Sedai was not easy. Making them admit defeat lay on the far side of impossible. He forced his hands to unknot and rest on his knees, giving an appearance of calm he was nowhere near feeling. They knew he was Tavirin, one of those few the pattern would shape itself around for a time. Worse, they knew he was tied to Rand in some way nobody understood, least of all himself or Rand. Or Matt. Matt was in that tangle, too. Another Tavirin, though neither of them as strongly as Rand. Given half a chance, those women would have him and Matt inside the White Tower as fast as they would Rand, tethered like goats until the lion came. And they had kidnapped Rand, mistreated him. Aram was right about one thing. They could not be trusted. But what Aram suggested, he would not, could not, countenance such a thing. The thought made him queasy.
"I'll hear no more of that,"
he growled. The one-time tinker opened his mouth, but Perrin cut him off.
"Not a word, Aram, do you hear me? Not one word!"
"As my lord Perrin commands," Aram muttered, inclining his head. Perrin wished he could see the man's face. There was no anger in the smell of him, no resentment. That was the worst of it. There had been no anger sent even when Aram suggested murder. A pair of Two Rivers men climbed up on the wheels of the next wagon, peering across the wagon bed and down the hill toward the north. Each wore a bristling quiver on his right hip and a stout, long-bladed knife, almost a short sword, on his left. A good 300 men from home had followed Perrin here. He cursed the first to call him Lord Perrin, cursed the day he had stopped trying to quash it. Even with the rumors and noises usual in a camp this size, he had no trouble hearing the pair. Tod Alkar, a year younger than Perrin, let out a long breath as if seeing what lay below for the first time. Perrin could almost sense the lanky man's lantern jaw working. Tod's mother had willingly let him go, only for the honor of her son following Perrin Goldeneyes.
"A famous victory," Tod said finally. "That's what we won, wasn't it, Jondin?"
Grizzled Jondin Baran, gnarled as an oak root, was one of the few older men among the 300. A better bow shot than anyone in the Two Rivers except Master Althor, and a better hunter than anyone at all, he was one of the Two Rivers' less distinguished residents. Jondin had not worked a day more than he had to since he was old enough to leave his father's farm. The forests and the hunt were all he cared about, that and drinking too much at feast days. Now he spat loudly.
"If you say so, boy. Was those bloody Ashaman wanted anyway? And welcome to it, I say. Too bad they don't take it and go someplace else to celebrate."
"They aren't so bad," Tod protested. "I wouldn't mind being one myself."
That sounded more boast and bluff than truth. Smelled it, too. Without looking, Perrin was sure he was licking his lips. Likely Tod's mother had used tales of men who could channel to frighten him not so many years ago.
"I mean to say Rand. That is, the Dragon Reborn.
It still sounds odd, doesn't it? Randall Thor being the Dragon Reborn and all?" Tod laughed, a short, uneasy sound.
"Well, he can channel, and it doesn't seem so... He doesn't... I mean..."
He swallowed loudly.
"Besides, what could we have done about all those Aes Sedai without them?"
That came out in a whisper. He smelled afraid now.
"Jondin, what are we going to do? I mean, Aes Sedai prisoners?"
The older man spat again, louder than before. He did not bother to lower his voice, either. Jondin always said what he thought, no matter who heard, another reason for his bad repute.
"Better for us if they'd all died yesterday, boy. We'll pay for that before it's done. Mark me, we'll pay large."
Perrin shut out the rest, no easy task with his ears. First Aram, and now Jondin and Tod, if not so directly.
"Burn Jondin."
No, the man might make Matt look industrious, but if he spoke it, others thought it. No Two Rivers man would willingly harm a woman, but who else wished the Aes Sedai prisoners dead? And who might try to achieve the wish? He scanned the wagon circle uneasily. The thought that he might have to protect the Aes Sedai prisoners was not pleasant, but he did not shirk it. He had little fondness for any Aes Sedai, least of all for these, but he had grown up in the unspoken certainty that a man would put himself at risk to protect a woman as far as she allowed. Whether he liked her, or even knew her, was beside the point. True, an Aes Sedai could tie any man she chose into a knot 9 ways from next feast day, but cut off from the power, they became like anyone else. That was the struggle whenever he looked at them. 2 dozen Aes Sedai. 2 dozen women who might not know how to defend themselves without the power. For a bit he studied the Ashaman guards, everyone wearing a face like grim death, except the 3 overseeing the stilled women. They tried to appear as somber as the rest, but under the attempt lay something else. Satisfaction, maybe, if only he was close enough to catch a scent of them. Any Aes Sedai was a threat to the Ashaman. Perhaps the reverse was true, too. Perhaps they would only still them, From the little he had picked up, stilling an Aes Sedai amounted to a killing that just took a few years for the corpse to lie down. Whatever the case, he decided reluctantly, he had to leave the Ashaman to Rand. They spoke only to each other and the prisoners, and Perrin doubted they would listen to anyone but Rand. The question was, what would Rand say? And what could Perrin do if he said the wrong thing? Putting that problem aside, he scratched his beard with one finger. The Kyrianen were too nervous about Aes Sedai to consider harming them, and the Maenners too respectful. But he would keep an eye on them anyway. Who would have thought Jondan would go as far as he had? Among the Kyrianen or Maenners he possessed some influence, though it would surely vanish if they once thought. He was really just a blacksmith, after all. That left the Aiel. Perrin sighed. He was not certain how much influence even Rand truly had with the Aiel. It was difficult picking out individual scents with so many people around, but he had grown used to telling as much by smells as by what his eyes told him. The Siswayaman, who came close enough, smelled calm but alert, a smooth, strong scent. They hardly appeared to notice the Aes Sedai. The maiden's aromas were spiky with suppressed fury, and grew spikier when they looked at the prisoners. And the wise ones? Every wise one who had come here from Kyrian was able to channel, though none had the ageless face. He supposed they used the one power too seldom. Still, smooth-cheeked like Adara, or as leathery-faced as white-haired Thoralia, they carried themselves with a self-possession easily matching the Aes Sedai's. Graceful women for the most part, most of them tall, as nearly all Aiel were, they seemed to ignore the sisters completely. Soralia's eyes passed across the prisoners without pausing, and she went right on talking softly to Adara and another wise one, a lean, yellow-haired woman he did not know by name. If only he could make out what they were saying. They walked by, not a line changing on those three unruffled faces, but their scents were another matter. When Soralia's gaze swept over the Aes Sedai, the smell of her went cold and distant, grim and purposeful, and as she spoke to the other two, their scents changed to match hers. "A fine bloody stew," he growled. "Trouble?" Aram asked, sitting up straighter on his heels, right hand poised to dart for the wolf-head-pommeled sword-hilt, jutting above his shoulder. He had become very good with that sword in a very short time, and he was never loath to use it. "There's no trouble, Aram." That was not quite a lie. Jolted out of his glum brooding, Perrin really looked at the others for the first time. At all of them together. He did not like what he saw, and the Aes Sedai were only part. Kyrianen and Maenners watched Aiel suspiciously, which was no more than the Aiel's return suspicion, especially toward the Kyrianen. No real surprise there. Aiel did have a certain reputation, after all, for being none too friendly to anyone born this side of the spine of the world, Kyrianen least of all. Simple truth was, Aiel and Kyrianen hated each other about as hard as it was possible to hate. Neither side had really put their enmity aside. The best that could be said was that it was on a loose leash. Yet up to now, he had been convinced they would hold it in. For Rand's sake, if no other reason. A mood hung in the camp, though, a tension that had wound everyone tight. Rand was free now, and temporary alliances were just that, after all. Temporary. Aiel hefted their spears when they looked at the Kyrianen, and the Kyrianen grimly fingered their swords. So did the Maenners. They had no quarrel with the Aiel, had never fought them, except for the Aiel War, when everybody had. But if it came to a fight, there was little doubt which side they would be on. The Two Rivers men, too, probably. The dark mood had settled deepest in the Ashaman and the Wise Ones, though. The black-coated men paid no more heed to the Maidens and the Siswayaman than to Kyrianen or Maenners or Two Rivers men. But they studied the Wise Ones with faces almost as dark as those directed at the Aes Sedai. Very likely they made small distinction between one woman who could wield the power and another. Any could be an enemy and dangerous. 13 together were deadly dangerous, and there were better than 90 Wise Ones in the camp or nearby. Fewer than half the number of Ashaman, but still enough to do damage if they chose. Women who could channel, yet they seemed to follow Rand. They seemed to follow Rand, yet they were women who could channel. The wise ones looked at the Ashaman only a trifle less coldly than they did the Aes Sedai. The Ashaman were men who could channel, but they followed Rand. They followed Rand, but Rand was a special case. According to Gaul, his channeling was not mentioned in the prophecies about their Karakarn, but the Aiel seemed to pretend that inconvenient fact did not exist. The Ashaman were not in those prophecies at all, though. It must be like discovering you had a pride of rabid lions fighting on your side. How long would they remain loyal? Maybe it would be better to put them down now. His head fell back against the wagon wheel, eyes closed, and his chest heaved in silent, mirthless laughter. Think of the good things on High Chazaline. Burn me, he thought wryly. I should have gone with Rand. No, it was best to know, and better soon than late. But what in the light was he to do? If the Aiel and the Kyrianen and Mayaners turned on one another, or worse, the Ashaman and the Wise Ones, a barrel full of snakes, and the only way to find out which were vipers was to stick your hand in. Light, I wish I was home with Fael and a forge to work and nobody calling me Bloody Lord. Your horse, Lord Perrin. You didn't say whether you wanted stepper or stair, so I saddled. At Perrin's golden-eyed glare, Kenley Merrin shied back into the dun stallion he was leading. Perrin made a soothing gesture. Not Kenley's fault. What could not be mended had to be endured. Easy, lad. You did right. Stepper will do just fine. You chose well. He hated speaking to Kenley that way. Short and stocky, Kenley was barely old enough to marry or leave home, and certainly not old enough for the patchy beard he was trying to cultivate in imitation of Perrin. Yet he had fought Trollocs at Emmons Field and done well yesterday. But he grinned broadly at praise from Lord Perrin Bloody Golden Eyes. Rising, Perrin took his axe from where he had propped it under the wagon, out of sight, and for a little while out of mind, and thrust the haft through the loop on his belt. A heavy half-moon blade balanced by a thick, curving spike, a thing made for no other purpose than killing. The axe haft felt too familiar to his hands for comfort. Did he even remember what a good forge hammer felt like? There were other things besides Lord Perrin that it might be too late to change. A friend had once told him to keep the axe until he began to like using it. The thought made him shiver in spite of the heat. He swung into Stepper's saddle, shadowed by Aram with the gray, and sat facing south into the wagon circle. At least half again as tall as even the tallest of the Aiel, Loyal was just stepping carefully over crossed wagon tongues. With the size of him, he did look as though he might break one of the heavy wooden shafts with a heedless step. As usual, the Ogier had a book in his hand, a thick finger marking his place, and the capacious pockets of his long coat bulged with more. He had spent the morning in a tiny clump of trees he called restful and shady, but whatever the shade among those trees, the heat was affecting him too. He looked tired, and his coat was undone, his shirt unlaced, and his boots rolled down below his knees. Or maybe it was more than the heat. Just inside the wagons, Loyal paused, peering at the Aes Sedai and the Ashaman, and his tufted ears quivered uneasily. Eyes big as teacups rolled toward the Wise Ones, and his ears vibrated again. Ogier were sensitive to the mood of a place. When he saw Perrin, Loyal came striding across the camp. Sitting his saddle, Perrin was two or three hands shorter than Loyal standing.
"Perrin," Loyal whispered, "this is all wrong. It isn't right. And it is dangerous, besides."
For an Ogier, it was a whisper. He sounded like a bumblebee the size of a mastiff. Some of the Aes Sedai turned their heads. "Could you speak a little louder?" Perrin said, almost under his breath. "I think somebody in Andor didn't hear. In the west of Andor." Loyal looked startled, then grimaced, long eyebrows brushing his cheeks.
I do know how to whisper, you know.
This time it was unlikely anyone could hear clearly more than 3 paces away or so.
What are we going to do, Perrin? It is wrong holding Aes Sedai against their will. Wrong, and wrong-headed, too. I have said that before, and I will again. And that isn't even the worst. The feel here. One spark, and this place will erupt like a wagon load of fireworks. Does Rand know about this?
I don't know, Perrin said to both questions, and after a moment the Ogier nodded reluctantly.
Someone has to know, Perrin. Someone has to do something.
Loyal looked north, over the wagons behind Perrin, and Perrin knew there was no putting it off longer. Unwillingly, he turned stepper. He would rather have worried over Aes Sedai and Ashaman and Wise Ones till his hair fell out. But what had to be done had to be done. Think of the good on High Chazaline. Chapter 2. The Butcher's Yard. At first, Perrin did not look downslope toward where he would ride, where he should have gone with Rand this morning. Instead, he sat his saddle at the edge of the wagons and sent his eyes anywhere else, though the view everywhere made him want to sick up. It was like being hit in the belly with a hammer. Hammerstroke. 19 fresh graves atop a squat hill to the east. 19 Two Rivers men who would never see home again. A blacksmith seldom had to see people die because of his decisions. At least the Two Rivers men had obeyed his orders. There would have been more graves otherwise. Hammerstroke! Rectangles of newly turned earth blanketed the next slope over from that as well. Near to 100 Mayenners and more Kyrianen, who had come to Dumai's Wells to die. Never mind causes or reasons, they had followed Perrin Ebarra. Hammerstroke! The ridge face to the west seemed solid graves, maybe 1,000 or more. 1,000 Aiel, buried standing upright to face each sunrise. 1,000. Some were maidens. The men tied his stomach into knots. The women made him want to sit down and cry. He tried telling himself that they had all chosen to be here, that they had had to be here. Both things were true. But he had given the orders, and that made the responsibility for those graves his. Not Rand's, not the Aes Sedai's. His. The living Aiel had only stopped singing over the dead a short while ago, haunting songs, sung in parts that lingered in the mind. Life is a dream that knows no shade. Life is a dream of pain and woe. A dream from which we pray to wake, a dream from which we wake and go. Who would sleep when the new dawn waits? Who would sleep when the sweet winds blow? A dream must end when the new day comes. This dream from which we wake and go. They appeared to find comfort in those songs. He wished he could too, but as far as he could see, the Aiel truly did not seem to care whether they lived or died, and that was mad. Any sane man wanted to live. Any sane man would run as far as he could from a battle, run as hard as he could. Stepper tossed his head, nostrils flaring at the smells from below, and Perrin patted the dun's neck. Aram was grinning as he looked at what Perrin tried to block out. Loyal's face had so little expression it might have been carved from wood. His lips moved slightly, and Perrin thought he heard,
"Light, let me never see the like again."
Drawing a deep breath, he made his eyes follow theirs to Dumai's Wells. In some ways, it was not as bad as the graves. He had known some of those people since he was a child. But it all crashed down on him at once anyway, like the scent in his nose made solid and smashing him between the eyes. The memories he wanted to forget came rushing back. Dumai's Wells had been a killing ground, a dying ground, but now it was worse. Less than a mile away, the charred remains of wagons stood around a small copse of trees, nearly hiding the low stone copings of the wells. And surrounding that, A seething sea of black, vultures and ravens and crows in tens of thousands, swirling up in waves and settling down again, concealing the broken earth. For which Perrin was more than grateful. The Ashaman's methods had been brutal, destroying flesh and ground with equal impartiality. Too many Shido had died to bury in less than days, even had anyone cared to bury them. So the vultures gorged, and the ravens, and the crows. The dead wolves were down there, too. He had wanted to bury them, but that was not the wolves' way. Three Aes Sedai corpses had been found, their channeling unable to save them from spears and arrows in the madness of battle, and half a dozen dead warders, too. They were buried in the clearing near the wells. The birds were not alone with the dead. Far from it. Black-feathered waves rose around Lord Dobrain Taberwin, and over 200 of his mounted Carrion and armsmen, and Lieutenant Javier Nurella, with all that remained of his Mayenners aside from the guards and the warders. Khan, with two white diamonds on blue, picked out the Carrion officers, all but Dobrain himself, and the Mayenners' red armor and red streamered lances made a brave show amid the carnage. But Dobrain was not the only one who held a cloth to his nose. Here and there a man leaned from the saddle trying to empty a stomach already emptied earlier. Mazrim Taim, almost as tall as Rand, was afoot in his black coat with the blue and gold dragons climbing the sleeves, and maybe 100 more of the Ashaman. Some of them heaved up their bellies, too. There were maidens by the score, more Siswayaman than Karienin and Mayenners and Ashaman combined, and several dozen wise ones to boot. All supposedly in case the Shido returned, or perhaps in case some of the dead were only shamming, though Perrin thought anyone who pretended to being a corpse here would soon go insane. All centered around Rand. Perrin should have been down there with the Two Rivers men. Rand had asked for them, spoken about trusting men from home, but Perrin had made no promises.
"You'll have to settle for me and late," he thought. "You'll have to settle for me and late," he thought. In a little bit, when he managed to steel himself to the butcher's yard below. Only butcher knives did not mow down people, and they were tidier than axes, tidier than vultures. The black-coated Ashaman faded into the sea of birds, death swallowed by death, and ravens and crows surging up hid the others. But Rand stood out in the tattered white shirt he had been wearing when rescue came. Though perhaps he hardly needed deliverance by that time. The sight of Min, close beside Rand in pale red coat and snug breeches, made Perrin grimace. That was no place for her, or anyone. But she stayed closer to Rand since the rescue than even Taim did. Somehow Rand had managed to free both himself and her well before Perrin broke through, or even the Ashaman, and Perrin suspected she saw Rand's presence as the only real safety. Sometimes, as he rode across that charnel ground, Rand patted Min's arm or bent his head as if speaking to her, but not with his main attention. Dark clouds of birds billowed around them, the smaller darting away to feed elsewhere, the vultures giving ground reluctantly, some refusing to take wing, extending featherless necks and squawking defiantly as they waddled back. Now and then Rand stopped, bending over a corpse. Sometimes fire darted from his hands to strike down vultures that did not give way. Every time Nandera, who led the maidens, or Sulin, her second, argued with him. Sometimes wise ones did, too, from the way they tugged at the body's coat as if demonstrating something. And Rand would nod and move on. Not without backward glances, though, and only until another body caught his attention. "What is he doing?" demanded a haughty voice at Perrin's knee. By scent, he knew her before he looked down. Statuesque and elegant in a green silk riding dress and thin linen dust cloak, Karuna Nachiman was sister to King Pytar of Arafel, and a powerful noble in her own right, and becoming Aes Sedai had done nothing to dampen her manner. Trapped in what he was watching, he had not heard her approach. "Why is he doubting that? He should not be." Not all the Aes Sedai in the camp were prisoners.
though those who were not had been keeping out of sight since yesterday, talking among themselves, Perrin suspected, and trying to figure out what had happened at the last. Maybe trying to figure out some way around it. Now they were out in force. Vera Harkin, another green, stood at Karuna's shoulder, a farmwife by looks, despite her ageless face and fine woolen dress, but every scrap as proud as Karuna in her own way. This farmwife would tell a king to scrape his boots before coming into her house and be sharp about it. She and Karuna together led the sisters who had come to demise wells with Perrin, or perhaps passed leadership back and forth between them. It was not exactly clear, which was hardly unusual with Aes Sedai. The other seven stood in a covey not far away, or maybe in a pride, lionesses not quail by their air of being in charge. Their warders were arrayed behind them, and if the sisters were all outward serenity, the warders made no bones of their feelings. They were disparate men, some in those color-shifting cloaks that seemed to make parts of them disappear, but whether short or tall, thick or thin, just standing there, they looked like violence on a frayed leash. Perrin knew two of those women well, Varen Mathwin and Alana Mosvani. Short and stout and almost motherly at times in a distracted way, when she was not studying you like a bird studying a worm, Varen was brown Aja. Alana, slim and darkly pretty, though a little haggard around the eyes of late for some reason, was green. Altogether, five of the nine were green. Once, some time ago, Varen had told him not to trust Alana too far, and he more than took her at her word. Nor did he trust any of the others, including Varen. Neither did Rand, for all they had fought on his side yesterday, and despite what had happened at the end, which Perrin still was not sure he believed, even though he had seen it. A good dozen Ashaman lounged by a wagon about 20 paces from the sisters. A cocky fellow named Charles Gedwin had charge of them this morning, a hard-faced man who swaggered standing still. All wore a pin in the shape of a silver sword on their tall coat collars, and four or five besides Gedwin had a dragon in gold and red enamel fastened on the other side. Perrin supposed that had to do with rank in some way. He had seen both on some of the other Ashaman. Not precisely guards, they managed to be wherever Karuna and the others were, just taking their ease and keeping a sharp eye open. Not that the Aes Sedai took any notice, not that you could see. Even so, the sisters smelled wary and puzzled and infuriated. Part of that had to be because of the Ashaman.
Well?
Karuna's dark eyes flashed impatience. He doubted that many people kept her waiting.
I don't know, he lied, patting Stepper's neck again. Rand doesn't tell me everything.
He understood a little, he thought he did, but he had no intention of telling anyone. That was Rand's to reveal, if he chose. Everybody that Rand looked at belonged to a maiden. Perrin was convinced of it. A Shido maiden without a doubt, but he was not sure how much difference that made to Rand. Last night he had walked away from the wagons to be by himself, and as the sound of men laughing, because they were alive, faded behind him, he found Rand. The dragon reborn, who made the world tremble, sitting on the ground, alone in the dark, his arms wrapped around himself, rocking back and forth. To Perrin's eyes, the moon was nearly as good as the sun, but right then he wished for pitch blackness. Rand's face was drawn and twisted, the face of a man who wanted to scream, or maybe weep, and was fighting it down with every scrap of his fiber. Whatever trick the Aes Sedai knew to keep the heat from touching them, Rand and the Ashaman knew too, but he was not using it now. The night's heat would have done for a more than warm summer day, and sweat slid down Rand's cheeks as much as Perrin's. He did not look around, though Perrin's boots rustled loudly in the dead grass, yet he spoke hoarsely, still rocking.
151, Perrin. 151 maidens died today. For me. I promised them, you see. Don't argue with me. Shut up. Go away!
Despite his sweat, Rand shivered.
Not you, Perrin. Not you.
I have to keep my promises, you see. Have to, no matter how it hurts. But I have to keep my promise to myself, too, no matter how it hurts.
Perrin tried not to think about the fate of men who could channel. The lucky ones died before they went mad. The unlucky died after. Whether Rand was lucky or unlucky, everything rested on him. Everything.
Rand, I don't know what to say, but...
Rand seemed not to hear. Back and forth he rocked, back and forth.
Isan, of the Jara Sept of the Charinayil. She died for me today. Chuanda of the Spine Ridge Miagoma. She died for me today. Ajarin of the Shilan Darain.
There had been nothing for it but to settle on his heels and listen to Rand recite all 151 names in a voice like pain stretched to breaking. Listen and hope Rand was holding on to sanity. Whether or not Rand was still completely sane, though, if a maiden who came to fight for him had been missed down there somehow, Perrin was sure that not only would she be buried decently with the others on the ridge, there would be 152 names in that list. And that was none of Karuna's business. Not that, or Perrin's doubts. Rand had to stay sane, or sane enough, anyway. And that was that. Light sent it so. And the light burned me for thinking it so coldly, Perrin thought. From the corner of his eye, he saw her full mouth tighten momentarily. She liked not knowing everything about as well as being made to wait. She would have been beautiful, in a grand sort of manner, except that hers was a face used to getting what it wanted. Not petulant, just absolutely certain that whatever she wanted was right and proper and must be. With so many crows and ravens in one place, there are certainly hundreds, perhaps thousands, ready to report what they've seen to a murdral. She made no effort to mask her irritation. She sounded as though he had brought every bird there himself. In the borderlands, we kill them on sight. You have men, and they have bows. It was true. A raven or crow was all too likely to be a spy for the shadow, but disgust welled up in him. Disgust and weariness. To what point? With that many birds, the two riversmen and the Aiel could shoot every arrow they had, and spies would still report. Most times there was no way to tell whether the bird you killed was the spy or the one that flew away. Hasn't there been enough killing? There will be more soon enough. Light woman, even the Ashaman are sated. Eyebrows rose among the onlooking clutch of sisters. No one spoke to Aes Sedai that way, not a king or a queen. Bera gave him a look that said she was considering hauling him out of the saddle and boxing his ears. Still peering toward the shambles below, Karuna smoothed her skirts, her face coldly determined. Loyal's ears trembled. He had a deep but uneasy respect for Aes Sedai. Close to twice as tall as most of the sisters, sometimes he behaved as though one might step on him without noticing if he got in her way. Perrin gave Karuna no chance to speak. Give an Aes Sedai a finger, and she took your whole arm, unless she decided to take more. You've been staying clear of me, but I have a few things to say to you. You disobeyed orders yesterday. If you want to call it changing the plan, he pushed on when she opened her mouth, then call it that. If you think that makes it better. She and the other eight had been told to stay with the wise ones, well back from the actual fighting, guarded by the Two Rivers men and the Mayenners. Instead, they had plunged right into the thick of it, wading in where men were trying to cut one another into dog meat with swords and spears. You took Javi and Narella with you, and half the Mayenners died for it. You don't go your own way with no regard anymore. I won't see men die because you suddenly think you see a better way, and the Dark One take what everyone else thinks. Do you understand me?
Are you finished, farm boy?
Karuna's voice was dangerously calm. The face she turned up to him might have been carved from some dark ice, and she reeked of affront. Standing on the ground, she somehow made it seem that she was looking down at him. Not an Aes Sedai trick, that. He had seen Fael do it.
He suspected most women knew how. I will tell you something, though the meanest intelligence should be able to reason it out. By the three oaths, no sister may use the one power as a weapon except against Shadow Spawn, or in defense of her life, or that of her warders, or another sister. We could have stood where you would have had us, and watched until Tommen Gaydon without ever being able to do anything effective. Not until we were in danger ourselves. I do not like having to explain my actions, farm boy. Do not make me do it again. Do you understand?
Loyal's ears wilted, and he stared straight ahead so hard that it was plain he wished he were anywhere but here, even with his mother, who wanted to marry him off. Aram's mouth hung open, and he always tried to pretend Aes Sedai did not impress him at all. Jondan and Todd climbed down from their wagon wheel just a touch too casually. Jondan managed to stroll away, but Todd ran, looking back over his shoulder. Her explanation sounded reasonable. It was probably the truth. No, by another of the three oaths, it was the truth. There were loopholes, though, like not speaking the whole truth, or talking around it. The sisters might well have put themselves in danger so they could use the power as a weapon, but Perrin would eat his boots if they had not also been thinking they could reach Rand before anybody else. What would have happened then was anyone's guess, but he was certain their plans had not included anything like what actually happened.
"He's coming,"
Loyle said suddenly.
"Look, Rand is coming."
Dropping to a whisper, he added,
"Be careful, Perrin."
For an Ogier, it truly was a whisper. Aram and Karuna probably heard quite clearly, and maybe Bera, but certainly no one besides.
"They did not swear anything to you."
His voice went back to its normal boom.
"Do you think he might talk to me about what went on inside the camp, for my book?"
He was writing a book about the Dragon Reborn, or at least taking notes for one.
"I really didn't see much once the fighting began."
He had been at Perrin's side in the thick of it, wielding an axe with a haft nearly as long as he was tall. It was hard to take note of much else when you were trying to stay alive. If you listened to Loyal, you would think he was always somewhere else when things became dangerous.
"Do you think he might, Karuna Sedai?"
Karuna and Bera exchanged looks, then without a word glided across the ground to Varen and the others. Peering after him, Loyal heaved a sigh. A wind through caverns.
"You really should have a care, Perrin," he breathed. "You're always so hasty with your tongue."
He sounded like a bumblebee the size of a cat instead of a mastiff. Perrin thought he might learn to whisper yet, if they spent enough time around Aes Sedai. He motioned the ogre to be quiet, though, so he could listen. The sisters began talking right away, but not a sound reached Perrin's ears. Clearly they had erected a barrier with the one power. Clear to the Ashaman as well. They went from lounging to up on their toes in a heartbeat, and sometimes he ran his hand down the long hilt. And except for Taim, right at his other shoulder, and the wise ones following almost as close behind, and the rings of maidens and Siswayamon, Karienin and Mayenners, that completed the procession. What a relief that he would not have to ride down into that shambles after all. But he needed to warn Rand about all the tangled enmities he had seen this morning. What would he do if Rand did not listen? Rand had changed since leaving the Two Rivers, most of all since being kidnapped by Coiran and that lot. No. He had to be sane. When Rand and Min entered the wagon circle, most of the procession remained outside, though they hardly came alone, but with quite an assembly in its own right. Taim shadowed Rand, of course, dark and slightly hook-nosed, and what Perrin supposed most women would consider good-looking. A number of the maidens had certainly given him second looks, and third. They were forward about that sort of thing. As Taim stepped inside, he glanced to Gedwin, who shook his head just a hair. A grimace flashed across Taim's face, gone as soon as it appeared. Nandera and Sulin were right at Rand's heels, equally, of course, and Perrin wondered they did not bring 20 more maidens. They hardly seemed to let Rand bathe without maidens guarding the tub, that Perrin could see. He did not understand why Rand put up with it.
Each had her shufa draped around her shoulders, bearing short hair cut with a tail at the back. Dandera was a sinewy woman, hair more gray than yellow, but her tough features managed to be handsome, if not beautiful. Sulin, wiry, scarred, leathery, and white-haired, made Dandera look pretty and almost soft. They glanced at the Ashaman, too, without exactly seeming to, then scanned both groups of Aes Sedai just as circumspectly. Nandera's fingers flashed maiden hand talk. Not for the first time, Perrin wished he could understand it, but a maiden would give up the spear to marry a toad before teaching their hand talk to a man. A maiden Perrin had not noticed, sitting on her heels against a wagon a few paces from Gedwin, answered the same way, and so did another who until that moment had been playing at cat's cradle with the spear sister near the prisoners. Amis brought the wise ones in and took them aside to confer with Soralea and a few of the others who had stayed inside the wagons. Despite a face too young for her waist-long white hair, Amis was an important woman, second among the wise ones to Soralea. They used no one power tricks to shield their talk, but seven or eight maidens immediately encircled them and began singing softly to themselves. Some sat, some stood, some squatted on their heels, each by herself, and all happenstance. If you were a fool. It seemed to Perrin that he sighed a great deal since he became mixed up with Aes Sedai and wise ones. Maidens, too. Women in general just seemed to give him fits of late. Dobrain and Avien, leading their horses and minus their soldiers, brought up the rear. Avien had finally seen a battle. Perrin wondered whether he would be so eager to see the next. About the same age as Perrin, he did not look as young today as the day before yesterday. Dobrain, with the front of his long, mostly gray hair shaved in the style of Carianan soldiers, definitely was not young. And yesterday, definitely, had not been his first battle, yet the truth was he looked older too, and worried. So did Havian. Their eyes sought out Perrin. Another time, he would have waited to see what they wanted to talk about, but now he slipped from his saddle, tossed Stepper's reins to Aram, and went to Rand. Others were there ahead of him. Only Sulin and Nandera held their silence. Karuna and Bera had moved the moment Rand stepped inside the wagons, and as Perrin approached, Karuna was saying grandly to Rand, "You refused healing yesterday, but anyone can see you are still in pain. Even if Alana was not ready to leap out of her..." She cut off as Bera touched her arm, but she picked up again, almost without pause. "Perhaps you are ready to be healed now?" That had the sound of, "Perhaps you have come to your fool senses?" "The matter of the Aes Sedai must be settled without any more delay, Karakhan," Amis said formally, right atop Karuna.
"They should be given into our care, Randall Thor," Soralea added at the same time that Taim spoke. "The Aes Sedai problem does need to be settled, my lord dragon. My Ashaman know how to handle them. They can be held at the Black Tower easily."
Dark, slightly tilted eyes flickered toward Karuna and Bera, and Perrin realized with a shock that Taim meant all the Aes Sedai, not just those who were prisoners now. For that matter, though Amis and Soralea frowned at Taim, the looks they directed at the two Aes Sedai meant the same. Karuna smiled at Taim, at the wise ones, a thin smile to fit her lips. It was maybe a fraction harder when directed at the man in the black coat, but she seemed not to realize his intent yet. It was enough that he was who he was, what he was.
"Under the circumstances," she said coolly, "I am certain that Khoiran Sedai and the others will give me their parole. You have no more need to worry—"
The others spoke all at once.
"These women have no honor,"
Amis said contemptuously, and this time it was clear she included all of them.
"How could their parole mean anything?
They are Datang,"
Soralea said in a grim voice, as though pronouncing sentence. And Bera frowned at her. Perrin thought there was something in the old tongue. Again, the word seemed almost something he should recognize, but he did not know why it should make the Aes Sedai scowl, or why Sulin should suddenly nod agreement with the wise one, who went on like a boulder rumbling downhill.
They deserve no better than any other...
My Lord Dragon, Taim said, as if belaboring the obvious, surely you want the Aes Sedai, all of them, in the charge of those you trust. Those you know can deal with them, and who better... Enough! Rand shouted.
They fell silent as one, but their reactions were very different. Taim's features went blank, though he smelled of fury. Amis and Soralia exchanged glances and adjusted their shawls in near unison. Their scents were identical, too, and matched their faces in pure determination. They wanted what they wanted and intended to have it, Karakhan or no. Looks passed between Karuna and Bera as well, speaking such volumes that Perrin wished he could read them the way his nose read scent. His eyes saw two serene Aes Sedai in command of themselves, and anything else they wished to be in command of. His nose smelled two women who were anxious and more than a little afraid. Of Taim, he was sure. They still seemed to think they could deal with Rand one way or another, and with the wise ones. But Taim and the Ashaman put the fear of the light into them. Min tugged at Rand's shirt sleeve. She had been studying everybody at once, and the scent of her was almost as worried as the sisters. He patted her hand while glaring hard at everyone else, including Perrin when he opened his mouth. Everybody in the camp was watching, from the Two Rivers men to the Aes Sedai prisoners, though only a few Aiel stood close enough to hear anything. People might watch Rand, but they tended to stay clear of him, too, if they could. "The wise ones will take charge of the prisoners," Rand said at last, and Soralia suddenly smelled so satisfied that Perrin knuckled his nose vigorously. Taim shook his head in exasperation, but Rand rounded on him before he could speak. He tucked a thumb behind the buckle of his sword belt, a dragon etched and gilded, and his knuckles were white from gripping it. His other hand worked on the dark boar hide of his sword hilt. "The Ashaman are supposed to train and recruit, not stand guard, especially on Aes Sedai." Perrin's hackles stirred as he realized what aroma wafted from Rand when he looked at Taim. Hatred touched with fear. Light, he had to be sane. Taim gave a short, reluctant nod.
"As you command, my Lord Dragon."
Min glanced uneasily at the black-coated man and moved closer to Rand. Karuna smelled of relief, but with one last glance at Bera, she drew herself up in stubborn certainty.
"These Aiel women are quite worthy. Some might have done well had they come to the tower, but you cannot simply hand Aes Sedai over to them. It is unthinkable. Bera Sedai and I will..."
Rand raised a hand, and her words stopped in their tracks. Maybe it was his stare, like blue-gray stone. Or maybe it was what showed clearly through his torn sleeve, one of the red and gold dragons that wound around his forearms. The dragon glittered in the sunlight.
"Did you swear fealty to me?"
Karuna's eyes popped as though something had struck her in the pit of her stomach. After a moment she nodded, however unwillingly. She looked as disbelieving now as she had the day before, when she knelt down there by the wells at Battle's End and swore beneath the light and by her hope of salvation and rebirth to obey the dragon reborn and serve him until the last battle had come and gone. Perrin understood her shock. Even without the three oaths, had she denied it, he would have doubted his own memories. Nine Aes Sedai, on their knees, faces aghast at the words coming out of their mouths, reeking of disbelief. Right now, Bera's mouth was puckered up as though she had bitten a bad plum. An Aielman joined the small group, a tall man about the same height as Rand, with a weathered face and touches of gray in his dark red hair, who nodded to Perrin and touched Amis's hand lightly. She might have pressed his hand for a moment in return. Ruark was her husband, but that was about as much affection as Aiel displayed in front of others. He was also clan chief of the Tardar Aiel. He and Gaul were the only two men who did not wear the Siswayamon headband. And since last night, he and 1,000 spears had been out scouting in force. A blind man in another country could have sensed the temper around Rand, and Ruark was no fool.
"Is this the right moment, Randolthor?
When Rand motioned him to speak, he went on.
The Shido dogs are still fleeing east as fast as they can. I saw men with green coats on horses to the north, but they avoided us. And you said to let them go unless they gave trouble. I think they are hunting any Aes Sedai who escaped. There were several women with them.
Cold blue eyes glanced at the two Aes Sedai, Anvil Flat and Anvil Hard. Once, Ruark had walked lightly around Aes Sedai. Any Aiel had. But that had ended yesterday, if not before.
Good news. I'd give almost anything to have Galena, but still, good news.
Rand touched the hilt of his sword again, eased the blade in its dark scabbard. The action seemed unconscious. Galena, a Red, had been in charge of the sisters who held him prisoner. And if he was calm about her today, yesterday he had been in a fury that she had gotten away. Even now his calm was icy, the sort that could hide smoldering rage, and his scent made Perrin's skin crawl. They are going to pay. Every one of them. There was nothing to say whether Rand meant the Shido or the Aes Sedai who had escaped, or both. Vera moved her head uneasily, and he turned his attention back to her and Karuna. You swore fealty, and I trust that. He held up his hand, thumb and forefinger nearly touching to show how far. Aes Sedai always know better than anybody else, or so they think. So I trust you to do what I say. But you won't so much as take a bath without my permission, or a wise one's. This time it was Bera who looked as though she had been struck. Her light brown eyes swiveled to Amis and Soralia with astonished indignation, and Karuna quivered with the effort of not doing the same. The two wise ones merely shifted their shawls, but once again their aromas were identical. Contentment rolled off them in waves, a very grim contentment. Perrin thought it a good thing the Aes Sedai did not have his nose, or they would have been ready to go to war right then and there. Or maybe run, and dignity be hanged. That was what he would have done. Ruark stood there idly examining the point of one of his short spears. This was Wise One's business, and he always said he did not care what the Wise Ones did, so long as they kept their fingers out of Clan Chief's business. But Taim, he made a show of not caring, folding his arms and looking around the camp with a bored expression. Yet his scent was strange, complex. Perrin would have said the man was amused, definitely in a better humor than before.
The oath we took, Bera said at last, planting her hands on her ample hips, is sufficient to hold anyone but a dark friend.
The twist she gave to oath was almost as bleak as the one she gave dark friend. No, they did not like what they had sworn to.
Do you dare to accuse us? If I thought that, Rand snapped, you would be on your way to the Black Tower with Taim. You swore to obey. Well, obey!
For a long moment, Bera hesitated, then in an instant was as regal from head to toe as any Aes Sedai could be. Which was saying something. An Aes Sedai can make a queen on her throne look a slattern. She curtsied slightly, stiffly inclining her head a fraction. Karuna, on the other hand, made a visible effort to take hold of herself, the calm she assumed hard and brittle as her voice.
Must we then request permission of these worthy Aiel women to ask whether you are willing to be healed yet? I know Galena treated you harshly. I know you are welts from shoulders to knees. Accept healing, please.
Even please sounded part of an order. Min stirred at Rand's side.
You should be grateful for it as I was, sheepherder. You don't like hurting. Somebody has to do it, or else...
She grinned mischievously, very nearly the Min Perrin remembered from before she was kidnapped.
Or else you won't be able to sit a saddle. Young men and fools, Nandera said suddenly to no one in particular, sometimes bear pain they do not have to as a badge of their pride. And their foolishness. The Karakarn,
Sulin added dryly, also to the air, is not a fool. I think.
Rand smiled back at Min fondly, and gave Nandera and Sulin wry looks, but when he raised his eyes to Karuna again, they were stone once more.
Very well.
As she started forward, he added, but not from you. Her face grew so stiff it appeared ready to crack. Taim's mouth quirked in a wry, almost smile, and he stepped toward Rand, but without taking his eyes from Karuna, Rand flung out a hand behind him.
From her! Come here, Alana!
Perrin gave a start. Rand had pointed straight to Alana with never so much as a glance. That prickled something in the back of his head, but he could not make out what. It seemed to catch Taim as well. The man's face became a bland mask, yet dark eyes flickered between Rand and Alana, and the only name Perrin could put to the scent that writhed in his nose was puzzled. Alana gave a start, too. For whatever reason, she had been on edge ever since joining Perrin on his way here, her serenity at best a thin veneer. Now she smoothed her skirts, shot a defiant stare at Karuna and Bera, of all people, and glided around in front of Rand. The other two sisters watched her, like teachers intending to make sure a pupil performed well, and still not convinced she would. Which made no sense. One of them might be the leader, yet Alana was Aes Sedai, the same as they. It all deepened Perrin's suspicion. Mixing with Aes Sedai was too much like wading the streams in the waterwood near to the mire. However peaceful the surface, currents beneath could snatch you off your feet. More undercurrents seemed to appear here every moment, and not all from the sisters. Shockingly, Rand cupped Alana's chin, turning her face up. There was a hiss of indrawn breath from Bera, and for once Perrin agreed. Rand would not have been so forward with a girl at a dance back home, and Alana was not a girl at a dance. Just as surprising, her reaction was to blush and smell of uncertainty. Aes Sedai did not blush, in Perrin's experience, and they were never uncertain.
"Heal me," Rand said.
A command, not a request. The red in Alana's face deepened, and anger touched her scent. Her hands trembled as she reached up to take his head between them. Unconsciously, Perrin rubbed the palm of his hand, the one a Shido spear had laid open yesterday. Karuna had healed several gashes in him, and he had had healing before, too. It felt like being plunged headfirst into a freezing pond. It left you gasping and shaking and weak-kneed. Hungry, too, usually. The only sign Rand gave that anything had been done, though, was a slight shiver.
"How do you stand the pain?"
Alana whispered at him.
"It's done, then," he said, removing her hands, and turned from her without a word of thanks.
Seeming on the point of speaking, he paused, half turning to look back toward Demise Wells.
"They have all been found, Randalthor," Amis said gently.
He nodded, then again, more briskly. "It's time to be gone. Sorrelia, will you name wise ones to take over the prisoners from the Ashaman? And also as companions for Karuna and my other liege women." For an instant he grinned. "I wouldn't want them to err through ignorance."
"It shall be done as you say, Karakarn,"
adjusting her shawl firmly, the leather-faced wise one addressed the three sisters.
"Join your friends until I can find someone to hold your hands."
It was not unexpected that Bera would frown indignantly or Karuna become frost personified. Alana gazed at the ground, resigned, almost sullen. Sorrelia was having none of it. Clapping her hands sharply, she made brisk shooing motions.
"Well, move! Move!"
Reluctantly, the Aes Sedai let themselves be herded, making it seem they simply were going where they wished. Joining Sorrelia, Amis whispered something that Perrin did not quite catch. The three Aes Sedai apparently did, though. They stopped dead. Three very startled faces looking back at the wise ones. Sorrelia just clapped her hands again, louder than before, and shooed even more briskly.
Scratching his beard, Perrin met Ruark's eyes. The clan chief smiled faintly and shrugged. Wise one's business. That was all very well for him. Aiel were fatalistic as wolves. Perrin glanced at Gedwin. The fellow was watching Soralia lecture the Aes Sedai. No, it was the sisters he watched. A fox staring at hens in a coop just out of his reach. The wise ones have to be better than the Ashaman, Perrin thought. They have to be. If Rand noticed the byplay, he ignored it. Taim, you take the Ashaman back to the Black Tower as soon as the wise ones have charge of the prisoners. As soon as. Remember to keep an eye out for any man who learns too fast. And remember what I said about recruiting.
I can hardly forget, my Lord Dragon, the black-coated man replied dryly. I will handle that trip personally. But if I may bring it up again, you need a proper honor guard.
We have been over that, Rand said curtly. I have better uses for the Ashaman. If I need an honor guard, those I am keeping will do.
Perrin, will you?
My Lord Dragon, Taim broke in, you need more than a few Ashaman around you.
Rand's head turned toward Taim. His face matched any Aes Sedai for giving nothing away, but his scent made Perrin's ears try to lie back. Razor-sharp rage abruptly vanished in curiosity and caution. The one thin and probing, the other fog-like. Then, slashing, murderous fury consumed both. Rand shook his head just slightly, and his smell became stony determination. Nobody's scent changed that fast. Nobody's. Taim had only his eyes to go by, of course, and all they could tell him was that Rand had shaken his head, if just barely.
Think. You have chosen 4 dedicated and 4 soldiers. You should have Ashaman.
Perrin did not understand that. You thought they were all Ashaman.
You think I can't teach them as well as you?
Rand's voice was soft, the whisper of a blade sliding in its sheath.
I think the Lord Dragon is too busy for teaching, Taim replied smoothly,
yet the anger smell rose again.
Too important. Take men who need the least of it. I can choose the furthest along.
One, Rand cut in, and I will choose.
Taim smiled, spreading his hands in acquiescence, but the scent of frustration nearly overwhelmed anger. Again Rand pointed without looking.
Him.
This time, he seemed surprised to find he was pointing directly at a man in his middle years, sitting atop an upturned cask on the other side of the wagon circle, paying no attention to the gathering around Rand. Instead, elbow on his knee and chin propped on his hand, he was frowning at the Aes Sedai prisoners. The sword and dragon glittered on the high collar of his black coat.
What is his name, Taim?
Dashiva,
Taim said slowly, studying Rand. He smelled even more surprised than Rand did, and irritated, too.
Korlan Dashiva, from a farm in the Black Hills.
He will do, Rand said, but he did not sound sure himself.
Dashiva is gaining his strength rapidly, but his head is in the clouds often as not. Even when it isn't, he is not always entirely there. Maybe he's just a daydreamer, and maybe the taint on Saidin is touching his brain already. Better for you to choose Torval, or Ochaid, or...
Taim's opposition seemed to sweep away Rand's uncertainty.
I said Dashiva will do. Tell him he's to come with me, then turn the prisoners over to the wise ones and go. I don't intend to stand here all day arguing. Perrin, ready everyone to move. Find me when they are.
Without another word, he strode off, men clinging to his arm, and Nandera and Sulin like shadows. Taim's dark eyes glittered, then he was stalking away himself, shouting for Gedwin and Rochaid, Torval and Kisman. Black-hooded men came running. Perrin grimaced. With everything he had to tell Rand, he had not opened his mouth once. At that, maybe it would come better away from the Aes Sedai and the Wise Ones. And Taim. Really, there was not much for him to do. He was supposed to be in charge, since he had brought the rescue, but Ruark knew what needed doing better than he ever would,
and a word to Dobrain and Javien was sufficient for the Carianen and Mayeners. They still wanted to say something, though they held back until they were alone and Perrin asked what it was. Then Javien burst out,
"Lord Perrin, it's the Lord Dragon. All that searching through the corpses."
Then Javien burst out,
"Lord Perrin, it's the dragon reborn. All that searching through the corpses..."
"It seemed a little excessive," Dobrain interrupted smoothly. "We worry for him, as you can understand. A great deal depends on him. He might look a soldier, and he was, but he was a Carianen lord, too, and steeped in the game of houses, with all its careful talk, like any other Carianen."
Perrin was not steeped in the game of houses. "He's still sane," he said bluntly. Dobrain simply nodded, as if to say, "Of course," shrugged to say he had never intended to question, but Javien went bright red. Watching them go to their men, Perrin shook his head. He hoped he was not lying. Gathering the Two Rivers men, he told them to saddle their horses and ignored all the bowing, most of which looked spur of the moment. Even Fail said that sometimes Two Rivers people carried bowing too far. She said they were still working out how to behave with a lord. He thought about shouting, "I am not a lord," at them, but he had done that before, and it never worked. When all the others rushed for their animals, Denil Luan and Ban Alcine remained behind. Cousins, both were beanpoles, and they looked much alike, except that Denil affected mustaches like downturned horns in the Terrabonner style, while Ban wore narrow lines of dark hair in the fashion of Arad Doman, beneath a nose like a pickaxe. Refugees had brought a lot of new things into the Two Rivers.
"Those Ashaman coming with us?" Denil asked.
When Perrin shook his head, he exhaled so hard in relief that his thick mustaches stirred.
"What about the Aes Sedai?" Ban said anxiously. "They'll go free now, won't they? I mean, Rand is free. The Lord Dragon, that is. They can't stay prisoners, not Aes Sedai."
"You two just have everybody ready to ride," Perrin said. "Leave worrying about Aes Sedai to Rand."
The pair even winced alike. Two fingers rose to scratch worriedly at mustaches, and Perrin jerked his hand away from his chin. A man looked as if he had fleas when he did that. The camp was a bustle in no time. Everyone had been expecting to move soon, yet everyone had things left undone. The captive Aes Sedai's servants and wagon drivers hurriedly loaded the last items into the wagons and began hitching teams with a jingle of harness. Carianen and Mayeners seemed to be everywhere, checking saddles and bridles. Unclothed Guy Shine went running every which way, though there did not seem to be much for the Aiel to ready. Flashes of light outside the wagons announced the departure of Taim and the Ashaman. That made Perrin feel better. Of the nine who remained, another besides Joshiva was in his middle years, a stocky fellow with a farmer's face, and one with a limp and a fringe of white hair might easily have been a grandfather. The rest were younger, some little more than boys, yet they watched all the hubbub with the self-possession of men who had seen as much a dozen times. They did keep to themselves, though, and together, except for Dashiva, who stood a few paces apart, staring at nothing. Remembering Taim's caution about the fellow, Perrin hoped he was daydreaming. He found Rand seated on a wooden crate with his elbows on his knees. Sulin and Andera squatted easily to either side of Rand, both studiously avoiding looking at the sword at his hip. Holding their spears and bullhide bucklers casually, here in the midst of people loyal to Rand, they kept a watch on anything that moved near him. Min sat on the ground at his feet with her legs tucked under, smiling up at him.
"I hope you know what you're doing, Rand," Perrin said, shifting the axe haft so he could drop to his heels.
No one was close enough to hear except for Rand and Min and the two maidens. If Sulin or Nandera went running to the Wise Ones, so be it. Without more preamble, he launched into what he had seen so far this morning. What he had smelled, too, though he did not say that. Rand was not among the few who knew about him and wolves. He made it all seem what he had seen and heard. The Ashaman and the Wise Ones, the Ashaman and the Aes Sedai, the Wise Ones and the Aes Sedai. The whole tangle of tinder that might burst into flame any moment. He did not spare the Two Rivers men. "They're worried, Rand.
and if they are sweating, you can be sure some Karienin is thinking about doing something. Or a Tyran. Maybe just helping the prisoners escape. Maybe something worse. Light, I could see Danil and Ban and 50 more besides helping them get away, if they knew how. You think something else would be that much worse? Rand said quietly, and Perrin's skin prickled. He met Rand's gaze directly. 1,000 times, he said, in just as quiet a voice. I won't be part of murder. If you will be, I'll stand in your way. A silence stretched, unblinking blue-gray eyes meeting unblinking golden. Frowning at each of them in turn, Min made an exasperated sound in her throat. You two woolheads! Rand, you know you'll never give an order like that, or let anyone else give it either. Perrin, you know he won't. Now the pair of you stop acting like two strange roosters in a pen. Sulin chuckled, but Perrin wanted to ask Min how certain she was, although that was not a question he could voice here. Rand scrubbed his fingers through his hair, then shook his head, for all the world like a man disagreeing with somebody who was not there. The sort of voice that madmen heard. It's never easy, is it? Rand said after a time, looking sad. The bitter truth is I can't say which would be worse. I don't have any good choices. They saw to that themselves. His face was despondent, but rage boiled in his scent. Alive or dead, they're a millstone on my back, and either way they could break it. Perrin followed his gaze to the Aes Sedai prisoners. They were on their feet now, and all together, though even so they managed to put a little distance between the three who had been stilled and the rest. The wise ones around them were being curt with their orders, by the gestures they made and the tight faces in the sisters. Maybe the wise ones were better than Rand keeping them, too. If only he could be sure. "Did you see anything, Min?" Rand said. Perrin gave a start and directed a warning glance at Sulin and Nandera, but Min laughed softly. Leaning against Rand's knee, she really did look the Min he knew, for the first time since finding her at the wells. "Perrin, they know about me. The wise ones, the maidens, maybe all of them. And they don't care." She had a talent she kept hidden, much as he did the wolves. Sometimes she saw images and auras around people, and sometimes she knew what they meant. "You can't know what it's like, Perrin. I was 12 when it started, and I didn't know to make a secret of it. Everybody thought I was just making things up. Until I said a man on the next street was going to marry a woman I saw with him, only he was already married. When he ran off with her, his wife brought a mob to my aunt's house claiming I was responsible, that I'd used the one power on her husband, or given the two of them some kind of potion." Min shook her head. She wasn't too clear. She just had to blame somebody. There was talk of me being a dark friend, too. There had been some white cloaks in town earlier, trying to stir people up. Anyway, Aunt Rana convinced me to say I had just overheard them talking, and Aunt Mirren promised to spank me for spreading tales, and Aunt Jan said she'd dose me. They didn't, of course. They knew the truth. But if they hadn't been so matter-of-fact about it, about me just being a child, I could have been hurt or even killed. Most people don't like somebody knowing things about their future. Most people don't really want to know it themselves, not unless it's good anyway. Even my aunts didn't. But to the Aiel, I am sort of a wise one by courtesy. Some can do things others cannot, Nandera said, as if that was enough explanation. Min laughed again and reached out to touch the maiden's knee. Thank you. Settling her feet beneath her, she looked up at Rand. Now that she was laughing again, she seemed radiant. That held even after she became serious. Serious and not very pleased. As for your question, nothing of any use. Taim has blood in his past and blood in his future, but you could guess that. He's a dangerous man. They seem to be gathering images like Aes Sedai. A sidelong look through lowered eyelashes at Dashiva and the other Ashaman said who she meant. Most people had few images around them, but Min said Aes Sedai and warders always did. The problem is, what I can see is all blurry. I think it's because they're holding the power. That often seems true with Aes Sedai, and it's worse when they're actually channeling. Karuna and that lot have all sorts of things around them, but they stay so close together that it all, well, jumbles together most of the time. It's even muddier with the prisoners. Never mind the prisoners, Rand told her. That's what they'll stay. But Rand, I keep feeling there is something important. If I could only pick it out. You need to know. If you don't know everything, you must go on with what you do know, Rand quoted wryly. It seems I never do know everything. Hardly enough, most of the time. But there's no choice but to go on, is there? That was not at all a question. Loyal strode up, bubbling with energy despite his obvious weariness.
Rand, they say they're ready to go, but you promised to talk to me while it's fresh.
Abruptly his ears twitched with embarrassment, and that booming voice became plaintive.
I am sorry. I know it can't be enjoyable, but I must know. For the book. For the ages.
Laughing, Rand got to his feet and tugged at the Ogier's open coat. For the ages? Do writers all talk like that? Don't worry, Loyal. It will still be fresh when I tell you. I won't forget. A grim, sour scent flashed from him, despite the smile, and was gone. But back in Kyrian, after we all have a bath and sleep in a bed. Rand motioned for Dashiva to come closer. The man was not skinny, yet he moved in a hesitant, creeping way, hands folded at his waist, that made him seem so. My lord dragon, he said, tilting his head. Can you make a gateway, Dashiva?
Of course.
Dashiva began dry-washing his hands, flicking at his lips with the tip of his tongue, and Perrin wondered whether the man was always this jittery, or just when speaking to the dragon reborn. That is to say, the Mahale teaches traveling as soon as a student shows himself strong enough.
The Mahale? Rand said, blinking.
The Lord Mazrim Ta'im's title, my lord dragon. It means leader, in the old tongue.
The fellow's smile managed to be nervous and patronizing at the same time.
I read a great deal on the farm. Every book the peddlers brought by.
The Mahale, Rand muttered disapprovingly.
Well, be that as it may, make me a gateway to near Kyrian, Dashiva. It's time to see what the world has been up to while I was away, and what I have to do about it.
He laughed then, in a rueful way, but the sound of it made Perrin's skin prickle.
Chapter 3 Hill of the Golden Dawn. On a wide, low hilltop some miles north and east of the city of Kyrian, well away from any road or human habitation, a thin, vertical slash of pure light appeared, taller than a man on a horse. The ground sloped away in every direction, undulating gently. Nothing more than occasional brush obscured the view for more than a mile, all the way to the surrounding forest. Brown grass fell as the light seemed to rotate, widening into a square opening in midair. A number of the dead stems were slit lengthwise, sliced finer than any razor could have. By a hole in the air. The instant the gateway was fully open, veiled Aiel poured out, men and maidens spreading in every direction to encircle the hill. Almost hidden in the torrent, four sharp-eyed Ashaman took up positions around the gateway itself, peering toward the encircling woodland. Nothing stirred except with the wind, dust, tall grass, and branches in the distance. Yet each Ashaman studied the vista with the fervor of a starving hawk searching for a rabbit. A rabbit watching for a hawk might have been his intent, but never with that air of menace. There was really no break in the flow. One moment it was a flood of Aiel, the next mounted Kyrian and armsmen galloping out two by two, the crimson banner of light going up at their head as soon as it cleared the gateway. Without a pause, Dobrain drew his men aside and began forming them up a little down the slope, helmeted and gauntleted in precise ranks, lances raised to the same angle. Seasoned campaigners, they were ready to wheel and charge in any direction at his gesture. On the heels of the last Kyrianin, Perrin rode Stepper through, the dun passing in one stride from the hill below Demise Wells to the hill in Kyrian, and ducked in spite of himself.
The upper edge of the thing stood well above his head, but he had seen the damage a gateway could do, and had no wish to test whether they were safer standing still. Loyal and Aram followed close behind, the ogre afoot with his long hafted axe on his shoulder, bent his knees. And then the Two Rivers men, crouching on their saddles well beyond the gateway. Rad Al Dai carried the Red Wolf head banner, Perrin's, because everyone said it was, and Tel Luan the Red Eagle. Perrin tried not to look at those, especially the Red Eagle. The Two Rivers men wanted things both ways. He was a lord, so he had to have banners. He was a lord, but when he told them to get rid of those bloody banners, they never vanished for long. The Red Wolf had named him something he was not, and did not want to be, while the Red Eagle... More than 2,000 years after Manetherin died in the Trolloc Wars, close to 1,000 after Andor swallowed part of what once had been Manetherin, that banner was still as good as an act of rebellion for an Anderman. Legends still walked in some men's minds. Of course, it had been a few generations since Two Rivers folk had had any notion that they were Andermen, but queens' minds did not change so easily. He had met the new queen of Andor, what seemed a long time ago, in the Stone of Tyr. She had not been queen then, and was not yet really until she was crowned in Camelon. But Elaine seemed a pleasant young woman, and pretty, though he was not partial to fair-haired women. A bit taken with herself, of course, as daughter-heir. Taken with Rand, too, if snuggling in corners meant anything. Rand meant to give her not only the Lion Throne of Andor, but the Sun Throne of Kyrian. Surely she would be grateful enough to let the flying of a flag pass, when it did not really mean anything. Watching the Two Rivers men deploy behind those banners, Perrin shook his head. It was a worry for another day, in any case. There was nothing like armsman's precision in the Two Rivers men, most boys like Todd, farmers' sons and shepherds, yet they knew what to do. Every fifth man took the reins of four more horses, while the other riders hurriedly dismounted, longbows already strung and in hand. Those on the ground straggled together in rough lines, looking around with more interest than anything else, but they checked their quivers with practiced gestures and handled their bows with familiarity. The great Two Rivers bows. Even when strung, nearly as tall as the men who drew them. With those bows, not a man of them but could shoot farther than anyone outside the Two Rivers would believe, and hit what he aimed at. Perrin hoped there would be none of that today. Sometimes he dreamed of a world where there never was. And Rand? "Do you believe my enemies have been asleep while I was away?" Rand had said suddenly as they stood waiting for Dashiva to open the gateway. He had on a coat rooted out of the wagons, well-cut green wool, but hardly what he usually wore now. Short of taking the coat off a warder's back or a cotton sore from an Iuman, it was the only garment in the camp to fit him. Truth, you would have thought he insisted on silk and fine embroidery, the way he had had those wagons searched top to bottom yesterday and this morning. The wagons stretched out in line, teams hitched, canvas covers and iron hoops taken down. Karuna and the rest of the Sworn Sisters sat packed into the head wagon and not happy. They had ceased their protests as soon as they saw that protesting did no good, but Perrin could still hear coldly angry mutters. At least they rode. Their warders surrounded the wagon afoot, silent and stony, while the Aes Sedai prisoners stood in a rigid, sullen cluster ringed by every wise one who was not with Rand, which was to say all but Sorrelia and Amys. The prisoners' warders glowered in another clump 100 paces off, cold death waiting despite their injuries and Siswayamon guards. Except for Karuna's big black, its reins held by Rand, and a mouse-colored mare with fine ankles for Min, the Aes Sedai's and warders' horses not assigned to Ashaman, or used to fill out wagon teams, that had caused a commotion worse than making their owners walk, were all tied to long lead lines fastened to the wagon's tailgates. "Do you believe it, Flynn? Grady?" One of the Ashaman waiting to go through first, the stocky fellow with a farmer's face, looked at Rand uncertainly, then at the leathery old man with the limp. Each wore a silver sword pin on his collar, but not the dragon. "Only a fool thinks his enemies stand still when he isn't looking, my lord dragon," the old man said in a gruff voice.
He sounded like a soldier. What about you, Dashiva?
Dashiva gave a start, surprised to be addressed.
I grew up on a farm.
He tugged his sword belt straight, which it did not need. Supposedly they trained with the swords as much as with the power, but Dashiva did not seem to know one end from the other.
I don't know much about having enemies.
Despite his awkwardness, there was a kind of insolence to him. But then the whole lot seemed weaned on arrogance.
If you stay near me, Rand said softly, you will.
His smile made Perrin shiver. He smiled while he gave orders to go through the gateway, as though they would be attacked on the other side. There were enemies everywhere, he told them. Always remember that. There were enemies everywhere, and you never knew who. The exodus continued unabated. Wagons rumbled from Dumai's Wells to Kyrian, the sisters in the first like statues of ice being lurched about. Their warders trotted alongside, hands gripping sword hilts and eyes never resting on one spot. Clearly they thought their Aes Sedai needed protection, as much from those already on the hill as from anyone who might appear. The wise ones marched through, herding their charges. A number used sticks to prod the Aes Sedai along, though the sisters made a good job pretending there were neither wise ones nor prods. The Shido Gaishan came, trotting in a column four wide under the gaze of a single maiden. She pointed to a place out of the way before darting to join the other Fardar Aes Mai, and the Gaishan knelt there in lines, naked as jaybirds and proud as eagles. The remaining warders followed under their guard, radiating a massed fury that Perrin could smell over everything else. Then Ruark with the rest of the Siswayaman and maidens, and four more Ashaman, each leading a second horse for one of the first four, and Narella and his winged guards with their red-streamered lances. The Mayenners were puffed up over being the rear guard, laughing and shouting boasts to the Kyrianen of what they would have done had the Shido returned. Though, in fact, they were not last. Last of all came Rand on Karuna's gelding and Min on her mare. Sorlia and Amis strode along to one side of the tall black horse, Nandera and half a dozen maidens to the other, and Dashiva led a placid-looking bay mare at their heels. The gateway winked out, and Dashiva blinked at where it had been, smiling faintly, then scrambled clumsily into the mare's saddle. He seemed to be talking to himself, but it was probably because his sword tangled in his legs, and he nearly fell. Surely he was not mad already. An army covered the hill, all arrayed for an attack that plainly was not coming. A small army, only a few thousand, though it would have seemed fair-sized before the Aiel brought their numbers across the dragon wall. Guiding his horse slowly toward Perrin, Rand scanned the countryside. The two wise ones followed closely, talking softly and watching him. Nandera and the maidens followed, watching everything else. Had Rand been a wolf, Perrin would have said he was testing the air. He carried the dragon scepter across his high saddle bow, a 2-foot length of spear decorated with a green and white tassel and carved with dragons, and now and then weighed it lightly in his hand as if to remind himself of it. When Rand reined in, he studied Perrin as intently as he had the surrounding country. "I trust you," he said finally, nodding. Min stirred in her saddle, and he added, "And you, Min, of course. And you too, Loyal." The Ogier shifted uncertainly, with a hesitant glance for Perrin. Rand looked around the hillside, at the Aiel, and the Ashaman, and all the rest. "So few I can trust," he whispered tiredly. His scent was jumbled enough for two men, anger and fear, determination and despair. And woven through it all, weariness. "Be sane," Perrin wanted to tell him. "Hold on." A wash of guilt held his tongue, though. Because it was the dragon reborn he wanted to say it to, not his friend since childhood. He wanted his friend to stay sane. The dragon reborn had to stay sane.
"My lord dragon!"
one of the Ashaman called abruptly. He looked little more than a boy, with dark eyes as big as any girl's, and neither sword nor dragon on his collar, but pride in his bearing. "Narishma," Perrin had heard him called.
"To the southwest!"
A figure had appeared, running out from the trees a mile or more away. A woman with skirts hiked to her thighs. To Perrin's eyes, she was clearly Aiel.
A wise one, he thought, though there was no real way to tell at sight. He was just certain. The sight of her brought back all his edginess. Somebody out here, just where they happened to come out of the gateway, could not be good news. The Shido had been troubling Kyrian again when he set off after Rand. But to the Aiel, a wise one was a wise one, whatever her clan. They visited like neighbors over tea while their clans killed one another. Two Aiel trying to kill each other would step back to let a wise one pass between. Maybe yesterday had changed that, and maybe not. He exhaled wearily. At best, she could not be good news. Nearly everyone on the hill seemed to feel the same. Ripples of motion ran everywhere, spears hefted, arrows knocked. Kyrianen and Mayenners shifted in their saddles, and Aram drew his sword, eyes shining with anticipation. Loyal leaned on his tall axe and fingered the edge regretfully. The head was shaped like that of a huge wood axe, but engraved with leaves and scrolls, and inlaid with gold. The inlay was a trifle scuffed from the axe's late use. If he had to use it again, he would, but with as much reluctance as Perrin used his, and for many of the same reasons. Rand simply sat his horse and watched, face unreadable. Min edged her mare close enough to stroke his shoulder, like someone trying to soothe a mastiff with its hackles up. The wise ones also gave no sign of disturbance, but neither did they stay still. Soralea gestured, and a dozen of the women guarding the Aes Sedai broke off to join her and Amis, well away from Rand and out of even Perrin's hearing. Few had any gray in their hair, and Soralea's was the only lined face, but then there was hardly a gray hair to be seen on any of the wise ones here. The fact was, not many Aiel lived to have much gray hair. These women had position, though, or influence, however wise ones decided such things. Perrin had seen Soralea and Amis confer with the same lot before, though confer was not quite the word. Soralea spoke, with an occasional word from Amis, and the others listened. Edara raised a protest, but Soralea smothered it, apparently without breaking stride, then pointed out two of their number, Sotaren and Kossain. Immediately they gathered their skirts over their arms and sped off toward the newcomer, legs flashing. Perrin patted Stepper's neck. No more killing. Not yet. The three wise ones met nearly half a mile from the hill and stopped. They spoke, just for a moment, and then all came on at a run, back to the hill, and straight to Soralea. The newcomer, a youngish, long-nosed woman with a mass of incredibly red hair, spoke hurriedly. Soralea's face grew stonier by the word. Finally, the red-haired woman finished, or rather Soralea cut her short with a few words, and the lot turned to face Rand. None made a move toward him, though. They waited, hands folded at their waists and shawls looped over their arms, inscrutable as any Aes Sedai. "The Kara Karn," Rand muttered dryly under his breath. Swinging a leg over, he slid from his saddle, then helped Min to the ground. Perrin climbed down, too, and led Stepper after them to the Wise Ones. Loyal trailed along, and Aram followed on his horse, not dismounting until Perrin motioned him to. Aiel did not ride, not unless it was absolutely necessary, anyway, and they considered it rude for anyone to face them from horseback. Ruark joined them, and Gaul, who wore a scowl for some reason. It went without saying that Nandera and Sulin and the maidens came, too. The red-haired newcomer began as soon as Rand drew near. "Baron Magana set watches every way you might possibly come back to the Tree-Killer City, Karakhan. But in truth, no one thought this would be..." "Ferragin," Soralea said, sharply enough to draw blood. The red-haired woman's teeth clicked as she snapped her mouth shut, and she stared fixedly at Rand with brilliant blue eyes, avoiding Soralea's glare. Finally, Soralea took a breath and turned her attention to Rand.
"There is trouble in the tents," she said in a flat voice. "Rumors began among the Tree-Killers that you have gone to the White Tower with the Aes Sedai who came. Gone to bend knee to the Amarlan seat. None who know the truth dared speak, or the result would have been worse."
"And what is the result?" Rand asked quietly. He exuded tension, and Min began stroking his shoulder again.
"Many believe you have abandoned the Aiel," Amis told him just as quietly. "The bleakness has returned. Every day 1,000 or more throw down their spears and vanish, unable to face our future or our past. Some may be going to the Shido.
For a moment, disgust tinged her voice.
There have been whispers that the true Karakarn would not give himself to the Aes Sedai. Indirian says if you have gone to the White Tower, it cannot be willingly. He is ready to take the Kodara north, to Tarvalan, and dance the spears with any Aes Sedai he finds. Or any wetlander. He says you must have been betrayed. Timolin mutters that if the tales are true, you have betrayed us, and he will take the Miagoma back to the Threefold Land. After he sees you dead. Mandalayne and Janwin hold their council, but they listen to Indirian and Timolin both.
Ruark grimaced, sucking air between his teeth. For an Aiel, this was as much as tearing his hair in despair. "It's not good news," Perrin protested, "but you make it sound a death sentence. Once Rand shows himself, the rumors are done." Rand scrubbed a hand through his hair. If that was so, Sorlia wouldn't look like she had swallowed a lizard. For that matter, Nandera and Sulan looked as though their lizards were still alive on the way down. "What haven't you told me yet, Sorlia?" The leather-faced woman gave him a thin, approving smile.
"You see beyond what is said. Good."
Her tone stayed flat as worked stone, though.
"You return with Aes Sedai. Some will believe that means you did bend knee. Whatever you say or do, they will believe you wear an Aes Sedai halter. And that is before it is known you are a prisoner. Secrets find crevices a flea could not slip through, and a secret known by so many has wings."
Perrin eyed Dobraine and Norella, watching with their men, and swallowed queasily. How many of those who followed Rand did so because he had the weight of the Aiel massed behind him? Not all, certainly, but for every man who had chosen because Rand was the dragon reborn, 5 or even 10 had come because the light shone brightest on the strongest ranks. If the Aiel broke away, or splintered... He did not want to think about that possibility. Defending the Two Rivers had stretched his abilities as far as they would go, maybe farther. To Viren or not, he had no illusions. He was one of those men who ended up in the histories. That was for Rand. Village-sized problems were his limit. Yet he could not help himself. His mind churned. What to do if the worst came? Lists ran up in his head. Who would remain loyal, and who might try to slip away? The first list was sufficiently short, and the second sufficiently long to dry his throat. Too many people still schemed for advantage, as if they had never heard of the prophecies of the dragon or the last battle. He suspected some still would the day after Tarmogaden began. The worst of it was, most would not be dark friends, just people looking out for their own interests first. Loyal's ears hung limp. He saw it too. No sooner did Sorlia finish speaking to Rand than her eyes whipped to one side in a glare to bore holes in iron.
"You were told to remain in the wagon."
Vera and Karuna came to an abrupt halt, and Alana nearly stumbled into them.
"You were told not to touch the One Power without permission, but you listened to what was said here. You will learn that I mean what I say."
Despite Sorlia's auguring stare, the three held their ground. Vera and Karuna with icy dignity, Alana with smoldering defiance. Loyal's huge eyes rolled toward them, then toward the Wise One. If his ears had been limp before, now they wilted completely, and his long eyebrows dropped to his cheeks. Poring uneasily over his mentalists, Perrin wondered absently how far the Aes Sedai intended to push. Eavesdropping with the power? They might find a reaction from the Wise Ones worse than Sorlia's bark. From Rand, too. Not this time, however. Rand seemed unaware of them. He looked right through Sorlia. Or maybe he listened to something nobody else could hear again. "What of the wetlanders?" he said finally. "Kolaver has been crowned queen, hasn't she?" It was not really a question. Soralia nodded, thumb-tapping the hilt of her belt knife, but her attention never left the Aes Sedai. Who was chosen king or queen among the wetlanders was of small concern to Aiel, especially among the tree-killing Karienin. An icicle stabbed into Perrin's chest. That Kolaver of House Saigon wanted the Sun Throne was no secret. She had schemed for it from the day Galdrian Riotan was assassinated, before Rand had even declared himself the Dragon Reborn, and kept scheming after it became public knowledge that Rand meant the throne for Elaine. Few knew she was a cold-blooded murderer, however, and Fael was in the city. At least she was not alone. Bane and Chiad would be close to her. They were maidens and her friends, maybe almost what the Aiel called near-sisters. They would not let her be harmed. The icicle would not go away, though. Kolaver hated Rand, and by extension, anyone close to Rand, such as perhaps the wife of a man who was Rand's friend. No, Bane and Chiad would keep her safe.
"This is a delicate situation."
Moving closer to Rand, remarkably, Karuna ignored Soralia. For such a scrawny woman, the Wise One had eyes like hammers.
"Whatever you do can have serious repercussions. I..."
"What has Kolaver said about me?" Rand asked Soralia in a too casual tone. "Has she harmed Berlaine?" Berlaine, the first of Mayen, was who Rand had left in charge of Kyrian. Why did he not ask about Fael?
"Berlaine, Sir Paeandrag, is well," Soralia murmured, without stopping her study of the Aes Sedai.
Outwardly, Karuna stayed calm despite being interrupted and ignored, but the gaze she fixed on Rand could have frozen a forge fire solid with the bellows pumping. For the rest, Soralia gestured to Faragin. The red-haired woman gave a start and cleared her throat. Plainly, she had not expected to be allowed a word. She put dignity back on like a hastily donned garment.
"Kolaver Saigon says you have gone to Camelin, Karakarn, or maybe to Tyr. But wherever you have gone, all must remember that you are the Dragon Reborn and must be obeyed."
Faragin sniffed. The Dragon Reborn was no part of Aiel prophecies, only the Karakarn.
"She says you will return and confirm her on the throne. She speaks often to the chiefs, encouraging them to move the spears south. In obedience to you, she says. She does not see the Wise Ones, and hears only the wind when we speak."
This time her sniff was a fair approximation of Soralia's. No one told the clan chiefs what to do, but angering the Wise Ones was a bad way to start convincing the chiefs of anything. It made sense to Perrin, though, to the part of him that could think of anything besides Fael. Kolaver probably had never paid enough attention to the savages to realize the Wise Ones did more than dispense herbs. But she would want every last Aiel out of Kyrian. The question was, given the circumstances, had any of the chiefs listened to her? But the question Rand asked was not the obvious.
"What else has happened in the city? Anything you've heard, Faragin? Maybe something that might only seem important to a wetlander."
She tossed her red mane contemptuously.
"Wetlanders are like sandflies, Karakarn. Who can know what they find important? Strange things sometimes happen in the city, so I have heard, as they do among the tents. People sometimes see things that cannot be. Only for a time what cannot be is. Men, women, children have died."
Perrin's skin prickled. He knew she meant what Rand called bubbles of evil, rising from the Dark One's prison like froth in a fetid swamp, drifting along the pattern till they burst. Perrin had been caught in one once. He never wanted to see another.
"If you mean what the wetlanders do," she went on, "who has time to watch sand flies, unless they bite? That minds me of one thing. I do not understand it, but perhaps you do. These sandflies will bite sooner or later."
"What sandflies? Wetlanders? What are you talking about?"
Faragin was not as good as Soralia at that level look, yet no Wise One that Perrin had seen appreciated others' impatience. Not even the Chief of Chiefs.
Thrusting her chin up, she gathered her shawl and answered. 3 days ago, the tree killers, Caroline Damodred and Toram Riotin, approached the city. They issued a proclamation that Kolaver Saigon is a usurper, but they sit in their camp south of the city and do nothing except send a few people into the city now and then. Away from their camp, 100 of them will run from one Algaid Siswai, or even a Gashain. The man called Darlan Cisnera and other tyrants arrived by ship below the city yesterday and joined them. They have been feasting and drinking ever since, as if celebrating something. Tree-killer soldiers gather in the city at Kolaver Saigon's command, yet they watch our tents more than they do the other wetlanders or the city itself. They watch and do nothing. Perhaps you know the why of all this, Karakarn, but I do not, nor does Bear or Magana, or anyone else in the tents. Lady Caroline and Lord Toram led the Karienin who refused to accept that Rand and the Aiel had conquered Karien, just as High Lord Darlan led their counterparts in Tyr. Neither revolt amounted to much. Caroline and Toram had been sitting in the foothills of the Spine of the World for months, making threats and claims, and Darlan the same down in Haddon Merc. But not any longer, it seemed. Perrin found himself running a thumb lightly along the edge of his axe. The Aiel were in danger of slipping away, and Rand's enemies were coming together in one place. All it needed now was for the Forsaken to appear, and Savannah with her Shido. That would put the cream on the honey cake. Yet none of it was any more important than whether somebody saw a nightmare walking. Fael had to be safe. She just had to be. Better watching than fighting, Rand murmured thoughtfully, listening to something unseen again. Perrin agreed with Rand wholeheartedly. Just about anything was better than fighting. But Aiel did not see it that way, not when it came to enemies. From Ruark to Sorelia, Foragin to Nandera and Sulin, they stared as though Rand had said sand was better to drink than water. Foragin drew herself up practically on tiptoe. She was not particularly tall for an Aiel woman, not quite to Rand's shoulder, but she appeared to be trying to put herself nose to nose. "There are few more than 10,000 in that wetlander camp," she said reprovingly, "and fewer in the city. They can be dealt with easily. Even Endirion remembers that you command no wetlander killed, except in self-defense. But they will make trouble left to themselves. It does not help that there are Aes Sedai in the city. Who can know what they—"
"Aes Sedai!"
The words came out cold, Rand's knuckles white on the dragon scepter.
"How many?"
At the smell of him, the skin between Perrin's shoulders crawled. Suddenly he could feel the Aes Sedai prisoners watching, and Bera and Karuna and the rest. Sorelia lost all interest in Karuna. Her hands planted themselves on her hips, and her mouth narrowed.
"Why did you not tell me this?"
"You gave me no chance, Sorelia," Foragin protested a touch breathily, shoulders hunching.
Blue eyes swung to Rand, and her voice firmed.
"There may be as many as 10 or more, Karakarn. There may be as many as 10 or more, Karakarn. We avoid them, of course, especially since—"
Back to Sorelia and breathiness.
"You did not want to hear about the wetlanders, Sorelia. Only our own tents. You said so."
To Rand, her back straightening.
"Most of them stay beneath the roof of Arlen Dulain, Karakarn, and seldom leave it."
To Sorelia, hunching.
"Sorelia, you know I would have told you everything. You cut me short."
As she realized how many were watching, and how many beginning to smile, among the wise ones anyway, Foragin's eyes grew wild, and her cheeks reddened. Her head swung between Rand and Sorelia, and her mouth worked, but no sound came out. Some of the wise ones began laughing behind their hands. Idara did not bother with a hand. Ruark threw back his head and roared. Perrin certainly did not feel like laughing. And Aiel could find something funny in having a sword stuck through him. Aes Sedai on top of everything else. Light. He cut straight through to what was important.
"Foragin, my wife, Fael, is she well?"
She gave him a half-distracted stare, then visibly pulled together the tatters of her poise.
"I think Fael Ebara is well, Sai Kerr," she said with cool composure.
Or almost.
She tried to sneak glances at Soralea from the corner of her eye. Soralea was not amused, or anything close to it. Arms folded, she gave Ferrigan a perusal that made the one she had given Karuna seem mild. Amis put a hand on Soralea's arm.
"She is not at fault,"
the younger woman murmured, too softly to reach any ears but the leathery wise ones and Perrin's. Soralea hesitated, then nodded. The flaying glare faded to her usual cantankerness. Amis was the only one Perrin had seen able to do that, the only one Soralea did not trample down when she got in her way. Well, she did not trample Ruark, but with him it was more a boulder ignoring a thunderstorm. Amis could make it stop raining. Perrin wanted more of Ferrigan. She thought Fael was well? But before he could open his mouth, Karuna bulled in with her usual tact.
"Now listen to me carefully," she told Rand, gesturing emphatically under his nose. "I called the situation delicate. It is not. The situation is complex beyond your imagining. So fragile a breath could shatter it. Bera and I will accompany you to the city. Yes, yes, Alana, and you as well."
She waved away the slender Aes Sedai impatiently. Perrin thought she was trying that looming trick. She did seem to be peering down her nose at Rand. Though tall as she was, he stood head and shoulders taller.
"You must let yourself be guided by us. One wrong move, one wrong word, and you may deliver to Kyrian the same disaster you gave Taraban and Ara-Doman. Worse, you can do incalculable damage to matters about which you know almost nothing."
Perrin winced. The whole speech could not have been better designed to inflame Rand. But Rand simply listened till she was done, then turned to Soralea. "Take the Aes Sedai to the tents. All of them, for now. Make sure everyone knows their Aes Sedai. Let it be seen that they hop when you say toad. Since you hop when the Kar Karn says it, that should convince everybody I'm not wearing an Aes Sedai leash." Karuna's face grew bright red. She smelled of outrage and indignation so strongly that Perrin's nose itched. Bera tried to calm her, without much success, while shooting you ignorant young lout looks at Rand, and Alana bit her lip in an effort not to smile. Going by the odors drifting from Soralea and the others, Alana had no reason to be pleased. Soralea gave Rand a slash of smile.
"Perhaps, Karakarn," she said dryly.
Perrin doubted that she hopped for anyone.
"Perhaps it will."
She did not sound convinced. With another shake of his head, Rand stalked off with Min, shadowed by the maidens and issuing orders as to who was to go with him, and who with the wise ones. Ruark began ordering the Sisuayamon. Alana followed Rand with her eyes. Perrin wished he knew what was going on there. Sorley and the others watched Rand, too, and they smelled anything but gentle. Ferrigan was standing alone, he realized. Now was his chance. But when he tried to catch her up, Soralea and Amis and the rest of the council surrounded her, neatly shouldering him away. They moved some distance before they began showering her with questions, the sharp looks directed at Karuna and the two other sisters leaving no doubt they would tolerate no further eavesdropping. Karuna appeared to be considering it, glowering till it seemed a wonder her dark hair was not standing on end. Bera was speaking to her firmly, and without trying, Perrin heard "sensible," and "patience," "cautious," and "foolish." Which applied to whom was not evident.
"There will be fighting when we reach the city," Aram sounded eager.
"Of course not,"
Loyal said stoutly. His ears twitched, and he peered uncomfortably at his axe.
"There won't be, will there, Perrin?"
Perrin shook his head. He did not know. If only the other wise ones would leave Ferrigan alone just for a few moments. What did they have to talk about that was so important?
"Women," Gaul muttered, "are stranger than drunken wetlanders."
"What?" Perrin said absently. What would happen should he simply push through the circle of wise ones? As if she had read his mind, Adara gave him a pointed frown. So did some of the others. Sometimes it did seem women could read men's minds. Well,
"I said women are strange, Perrin Ibarra. Chiad told me she would not lay a bridal wreath at my feet. She actually told me."
The Aielman sounded scandalized.
She said she would take me for a lover, her and Bane, but no more.
Another time that would have shocked Perrin, though he had heard it before. Aiel were incredibly free about such things.
As if I am not good enough for a husband, Gaul snorted angrily. I do not like Bane, but I would marry her to make Chiad happy. If Chiad will not make a bridal wreath, she should stop trying to entice me. If I cannot catch her interest well enough for her to marry me, she should let me go.
Perrin frowned at him. The green-eyed Aielman was taller than Rand, nearly a head taller than he.
What are you talking about? Chiad, of course. Have you not been listening? She avoids me, but every time I see her, she pauses long enough to make sure I have seen her. I do not know how you wetlanders do it, but with us, that is one of the ways a woman uses. When you least expect her, she is in your eyes, then gone. I did not even know she was with the maidens until this morning.
You mean she's here? Perrin whispered. That icicle was back now, now a blade, hollowing him out.
And Bane? Here too?
Gaul shrugged.
One is seldom far from the other. But it is Chiad's interest I want, not Bane's. Burn your bloody interest, Perrin shouted.
The wise ones turned to look at him. In fact, people all over the hillside did. Karuna and Bera were staring, faces entirely too thoughtful. With an effort, he managed to lower his voice. He could do nothing about the intensity, though.
They were supposed to be protecting her. She's in the city, in the royal palace with Kolaver. With Kolaver! And they were supposed to be protecting her!
Scratching his head, Gaul looked at Loyal.
Is this wetlander humor? Faile Barra is out of short skirts. I know she's not a child.
Perrin drew a deep breath. It was very hard keeping a level tone with his belly full of acid.
Loyal, will you explain to this... to Gaul that our women don't run around with spears? That Kolaver wouldn't offer to fight Faile? She'd just order somebody to cut her throat, or throw her off a wall, or...
The images were too much. He was going to empty his stomach in a moment. Loyal patted him awkwardly on the shoulder.
Perrin, I know you're worried. I know how I'd feel if I thought anything happened to Aerith.
The tufts on his ears quivered. He was a fine one to talk. He would run as hard as he could to avoid his mother and the young Ogier woman she had chosen for him.
Ah, well. Perrin, Faile is waiting for you safe and sound. I know it. And you know she can care for herself. Why, she could care for herself and you and me and Gaul as well.
His booming voice sounded forced, and it quickly faded to grave seriousness.
Perrin, you know you can't always be there to protect Faile, however much you want to. You are Taviran. The pattern spun you out for a purpose, and it will use you for that purpose.
Burn the pattern, Perrin growled. It can all burn, if it keeps her safe.
Loyal's ears went rigid with shock, and even Gaul looked taken aback. What does that make me? Perrin thought. He had been scornful of those who scribbled and scrabbled for their own ends, ignoring the last battle and the Dark One's shadow creeping over the world. How was he different from them? Rand reined the black in beside him. Are you coming?
I'm coming, Perrin said bleakly.
He had no answer for his own questions, but he knew one thing. To him, Faile was the world. Chapter 4 Into Cairhien. Perrin would have set a harder pace than Rand did, though he knew the horses could not have stood it long. Half the time they rode at a trot, the other half ran alongside their animals. Rand seemed unaware of anyone else, except that he always had a hand for Min if she stumbled. For the rest, he was lost in some other world, blinking in surprise when he noticed Perrin or Loyal. Truth to tell, nobody was any better. Dobrain's men and Havian's stared straight ahead, chewing their own worries over what they would find. The Two Rivers men had soaked in Perrin's dark mood. They liked Faile.
Truth be told, some worshipped her. And if she had been hurt in any way... Even Aram's eagerness grew bleak once he realized that Fail might be in danger. Every man focused on the leagues before them, toward the city ahead. Except for the Ashaman, anyway. Close behind Rand, like a cluster of ravens, they studied the country the column crossed, still wary of an ambush. Dashiva slumped in his saddle like a sack and muttered darkly to himself when he had to run. He glared as if he hoped there was an ambush. Small chance of that. Sualin and a dozen Fardarai's Mai trotted ahead of the column in Perrin's sight, with as many more farther ahead, probing the way, and an equal number on the flanks. Some had thrust their short spears into the harnesses that held their bowcases on their backs, so the spearheads bobbed above their heads. The short horn bows were out, arrows knocked. They kept equally sharp watch for anything that might threaten the Kar Karn, and on Rand himself, as though they suspected he might vanish again. If any trap waited, any danger approached, they would find it. Jihad was one of the maidens with Sualin, a tall woman with dark reddish hair and gray eyes. Perrin stared at her back, willing her to drop behind the others and speak to him. Now and then she spared him a glance, but she avoided him, as if he had three diseases, all catching. Bane was not with the column. Most of the maidens followed much the same route with Ruark and the Al-Guide Siswai, but moving more slowly because of the wagons and prisoners. Fail's black mare trotted behind Stepper, her reins tied to his saddle. The Two Rivers men had brought Swallow from Camelin when they joined him before Dumai's Wells. Every time he looked at the mare prancing along behind him, his wife's face swelled in his thoughts, her bold nose and generous mouth, flashing dark eyes tilted above high cheekbones. She loved the animal, maybe almost as much as she did him. A woman as proud as she was beautiful, as fiery as she was proud. Davram Bashir's daughter would not hide or even hold her tongue, not for the likes of Kolaver. Four times they stopped to rest the mounts, and he ground his teeth at the delay. Taking good care of horses was second nature to him. He checked Stepper absently, gave the stallion a little water by rote. Swallow he was more careful with. If Swallow reached Kyrian safely... A notion had planted itself in his mind. If he brought her mare to Kyrian, Fail would be all right. It was ludicrous, a boy's fancy, a small boy's foolish fancy, and it would not go away. At each of those stops, Min tried to reassure him. With a bantering grin, she said he looked like death on a winter morning, just waiting for somebody to shovel his grave full. She told him if he approached his wife with a face like that, Fail would slam the door on him. But she had to admit that none of her viewings promised that Fail was unharmed.
"Light, Perrin," she said at last in exasperated tones, snugging her gray riding gloves. "If anyone tries to harm the woman, she'll make him wait out in the hall till she has time for him."
He very nearly growled at her. It was not that the two disliked each other exactly. Loyal reminded Perrin that hunters for the horn could take care of themselves, that Fail had survived Trollocs unscathed.
"She is well, Perrin,"
he boomed heartily, trotting beside Stepper with his long axe across his shoulders.
"I know she is."
But he said the same 20 times, and each time he sounded a little less hearty. The Ogier's final attempt at heartening went further than Loyal intended.
"I am sure Fail can look after herself, Perrin. She is not like Aerith. I can hardly wait for Aerith to make me her husband so I can tend her. I think I'd die if she changed her mind."
At the end of that, his mouth remained open, and his huge eyes popped. Ears fluttering, he stumbled over his own boots and nearly fell.
"I never meant to say that,"
he said hoarsely, strutting along beside Perrin's horse once more. His ears still trembled.
"I am not sure I want to... I'm too young to get..."
Swallowing hard, he gave Perrin an accusing look and spared one for Rand up ahead, too.
"It is hardly safe to open your mouth with two Tavirin about. Anything at all might come out."
Nothing that might not have come off his tongue anyway, as he well knew, though it might have happened one time in 1,000, or 1,000 times 1,000, without Tavirin there. Loyal knew that also, and the fact of it seemed to frighten him as much as anything Perrin had ever seen.
Some considerable time passed before the Ogier's ears stopped shaking. Fael filled Perrin's mind, but he was not blind, not completely. What he at first saw without seeing, as they rode south and west, began to seep in at the edges. The weather had been hot when he headed north from Kyrian less than 2 weeks ago, yet it seemed the Dark One's touch had gained a harder hold, grinding the land more desperately than before. Brittle grass crackled beneath the horses' hooves, shriveled brown creepers spiderwebbed rocks on the hillsides. And naked branches, not merely leafless but dead, cracked when the arid wind gusted. Evergreen pine and leatherleaf stood brown and yellow, often as not. Farms had begun appearing after a few miles, plain structures of dark stone laid out in squares, the first in isolated clearings in the forest, then coming more thickly as the woodland thinned to trees hardly deserving the name. A cart road straggled there, running over the shoulders and crests of hills, accommodating stone-walled fields more than the terrain. Most of those early farms looked deserted. Here a ladder-backed chair lying on its side in front of a farmhouse, there a rag doll by the roadside. Slat-ribbed cattle and lethargic sheep dotted pastures where frequently ravens squabbled over carcasses. Hardly a pasture but had a carcass or two. Streams ran in trickles down channels of dried mud. Cropland that should have been blanketed with snow looked ready to crumble to dust, where it was not dust already, blowing away. A tall plume of dust marked the passage of the column until the narrow dirt way joined the broad stone-paved road that led from Jengai Pass. Here there were people, though few, and those often lethargic, dull-eyed. With the sinking sun almost halfway down to the horizon now, the air was an oven. The occasional ox-cart or horse-drawn wagon hurried off the road, down narrow tracks or even into fields, out of the way. The drivers and the handful of farm folk in the open stood blank-faced as they watched the three banners pass. Close to 1,000 armed men was reason enough to stare. 1,000 armed men heading somewhere in a hurry with a purpose. Reason enough to stare and be thankful when they passed out of sight. At last, when the sun had less than twice its own height yet to fall, the road topped a rise, and there 2 or 3 miles before them lay Kyrian. Rand drew rein, and the maidens, all together now, dropped to their heels where they were. They kept those sharp eyes out, though. Nothing could be seen moving on the nearly treeless hills around the city, a great mass of gray stone sinking toward the river Alguenya on the west, square-walled, square-towered, and stark. Ships of all sizes lay anchored in the river, and some tied to the docks of the far bank, where the granaries were. A few vessels moved under sail or long sweeps. They gave an impression of peace and prosperity. With not a cloud in the sky, the light was sharp, and the huge banners flying from the city's towers stood plain enough to Perrin when the wind unfurled them. The Scarlet Banner of Light and the White Dragon Banner, with its serpentine creature scaled scarlet and gold, the wavy-rayed rising sun of Kyrian, gold on blue. And a fourth, given equal prominence with the rest. A silver diamond on a field checked yellow and red. Lowering a small looking-glass from his eye, a scowling Dobrain stuffed it into a worked leather tube tied to a saddle. I hoped the savages had it wrong somehow. But if House Sygon flies with the rising sun, Kolaver has the throne. She will be distributing gifts in the city every day. Coin, food, finery. It is traditional for the coronation festival. A ruler is never more popular than for the week after taking the throne. He eyed Rand sideways. The strain of speaking straight out hollowed his face. The commoners could riot if they dislike what you do. The streets could run with blood. Havian's gray gelding danced his rider's impatience, and the man himself kept looking from Rand to the city and back. It was not his city. He had made it clear earlier that he cared little what ran in the streets, so long as his own ruler was safe. For long moments Rand studied the city, or seemed to anyway. Whatever he saw, his face was bleak. Men studied him, worriedly, maybe pityingly.
"I will try to see they don't," he said at last. "Flynn, remain here with the soldiers. Min?" She broke in on him sharply.
"No. I am going where you go, Randall Thor. You need me, and you know it."
The last sounded more plea than demand. But when a woman planted her fists on her hips that way and fixed her eyes to you, she was not begging.
"I am going, too," Loyal added, leaning on his long hafted axe. "You always manage to do things when I'm somewhere else."
His voice took on a plaintive edge.
"It won't do, Rand. It will not do for the book. How can I write about things if I am not there?"
Still looking at Min, Rand half raised a hand toward her, then let it fall. She met his gaze levelly.
"This is madness."
Holding his reins stiffly, Dashiva booted the plump mare closer to Rand's black. Reluctance twisted his features. Perhaps even Ashiman worried at being too near Rand.
"All it needs is one man with a bow or a knife, and you don't see him in time. Send one of the Ashiman to do what needs doing, or more, if you think it's necessary. A gateway to the palace. And it can be done before anyone knows what has happened."
"And sit here past dark," Rand cut in, reining his gelding around to face Dashiva. "Until they know this place well enough to open one? That way brings bloodshed for sure. They've seen us from the walls, unless they're blind. Sooner or later they will send somebody to find out who we are and how many." The rest of the column remained hidden behind the rise, and the banners were down there too. But men sitting their horses on a ridge with maidens for company would indeed attract curiosity. "I will do this my way." His voice rose in anger, and he smelled of cold fury.
"Nobody dies unless it can't be avoided, Dashiva. I've had a bellyful of death. Do you understand me? Nobody!"
"As my Lord Dragon commands." The fellow inclined his head, but he sounded sour, and he smelled... Perrin rubbed his nose. The smell, skittered, dodging wildly through fear and hate and anger and a dozen more emotions, almost too quickly to make out. He no longer doubted the man was mad, however good a face the fellow put on. Perrin no longer really cared, either. This close. Digging his heels into Stepper's flanks, he started for the city and Fail, not waiting for the rest, barely noticing Aram close behind. He did not have to see Aram to know he would be there. All he could think of was Fail. If he got Swallow safely into the city... He made himself keep Stepper at no more than a quick walk. A galloping rider drew eyes, and questions, and delays. At that pace, the others caught up with Aram and him fast enough, those who were coming. Min had gotten her way, it seemed, and so had Loyal. The maidens fanned out ahead, giving Perrin sympathetic looks as they trotted by. Chiad studied the ground until she was beyond him.
"I still don't like this plan," Javian muttered on one side of Rand. "Forgive me, my Lord Dragon, but I do not."
Dobrain, on Rand's other side, grunted.
"We have been over that, Mayenner. If we did as you want, they would close the gates on us before we covered a mile."
Javian growled something under his breath and danced his horse a few paces. He had wanted every man to follow Rand into the city. Perrin glanced over his shoulder, past the Ashiman. Damer Flynn, recognizable by his coat, and a few of the Two Rivers men were visible on the ridge, standing and holding their horses. Perrin sighed. He would not have minded having the Two Rivers men along, but Rand was probably right, and Dobrain had backed him up. A few men could enter where a small army could not. If the gates were shut, the Aiel would have to besiege the city, if they still would, and then the killing began anew. Rand had stuffed the dragon scepter into one of the gelding's saddlebags, so just the carved butt stuck out, and that plain coat looked like nothing the dragon reborn would wear. For the Ashiman, nobody in the city had any idea what a black coat meant. A few men were easier to kill than a small army, too, even if most of them could channel. Perrin had seen an Ashiman take a Shido spear through his belly, and the man had died no harder than any other. Dashiva grumbled under his breath. Perrin caught hero and fool in equally disparaging tones. Without Fail, he might have agreed. Once Rand peered toward the Aiel encampment sprawled over the hills 2 or 3 miles east of the city,
and Perrin held his breath. But whatever thoughts Rand had, he kept on the road. Nothing mattered more than Fael. Nothing, whether or not Rand saw it so. A good half mile short of the gates, they rode into another camp, one that made Perrin frown. It was big enough for a city itself, a thick band of ramshackle brush huts and rickety tents made from scraps, on burned-over ground, clinging to the high gray walls as far as he could see. This had been called Foregate once, warren of twisting streets and alleys, before the Shido burned it. Some of the people stared in silence as the strange party passed, at an Ogier and Aiel maidens, but most scuttled about their business with wary, sullen faces and a care to notice nothing that was not right in front of them. The bright colors and often tattered cast-off finery worn by Foregaters, mingled with the somber garb more usual for Kyrianon, the plain, dark clothes of villagers and farmers. The Foregaters had been in the city when Perrin left, along with thousands of refugees from deeper inside the country. Most of those faces bore bruises, and worse, cuts and slashes, often unbandaged. Kolaver must have put them out. They would not have left the shelter of the walls on their own. Foregaters and refugees alike feared the return of the Shido, the way a man who had been seared to the bone feared hot iron. The road ran straight through the camp to the Jangai gates, three tall square arches flanked by towers. Helmeted men lounged up on the battlements, peering down through the gaps in the stone teeth. Some stared off toward the men on the hilltop, and here and there an officer with a khan held a looking-glass to his eye. Rand's small party drew inquiring glances. Men a horseback and Aiel maidens, not common companions. Crossbows showed atop the serrated wall, but no one raised a weapon. The iron-bound gates stood open. Perrin held his breath. He wanted very much to gallop for the Sun Palace and Fael. Just inside the gates sat a squat stone guardhouse, where strangers to the city were supposed to register before entering. A square-faced Kyrianon officer watched them pass with a disgruntled frown, eyeing the maidens uneasily. He just stood there watching.
"As I told you," Dobrain said once they were by the guardhouse,
"Kolaver gave free access to the city for coronation festival. Not even someone under order of arrest can be denied or detained. It is tradition." He sounded relieved, though. Min sighed audibly, and Loyal let out a breath that could have been heard two streets over. Perrin's chest was still too tight for sighing. Swallow was inside Kyrian. Now, if he could only get her to the royal palace. Up close, Kyrian carried out what it had promised from afar. The highest of the hills lay inside the walls, but terraced and faced with stone, till they no longer seemed hills at all. Broad, crowded streets met at right angles. In this city, even the alleys made a grid. The streets rose and fell reluctantly with the hills, often simply cutting through. From shops to palaces, the buildings were all stark squares and severe rectangles. Even the great buttressed towers, each wrapped in scaffolding on a hilltop, the once-fabled topless towers of Kyrian, still being rebuilt after burning in the Aiel War. The city seemed harder than stone, a bruising place, and shadows stretching across everything heightened the effect. Loyal's tufted ears twitched almost without stopping. A worried frown creased his forehead, and his dangling eyebrows brushed his cheek. There were few signs of coronation festival, or High Chazaline. Perrin had no notion what the festival might entail, but in the Two Rivers, the Day of Reflection was a time of merriment and forgetting the bleakness of winter. Here, a near hush hung in the air, despite the number of people. Anywhere else, Perrin might have thought it the unnatural heat dragging people's spirits down, but except for Foregaters, Kyrianon were a sober, austere lot. On the surface, at least. What lay underneath, he would as soon not think about. The hawkers and cart peddlers, he remembered, were gone from the streets, the musicians and tumblers and puppet shows. Those people would be in the ragtag camp outside the walls. A few closed, dark-painted sedan chairs threaded through the quiet throngs, some with house banners a little larger than Khan standing stiffly above.
They moved as slowly as the ox carts, with goad-wielding drivers walking alongside, axles squealing in the stillness. Outlanders stood out, no matter how little color they wore, because few except Outlanders rode. The almost inevitably shorter natives looked like pale-faced crows in their dark garb. Aiel stood out too, of course. Whether one alone or ten together, they walked in clearings through the crowds. Eyes darted away and space just opened up around them wherever they went. Aiel faces turned toward the party as it made its slow way through the crowds. Even if not all recognized Rand in his green coat, they knew who a tall wetlander escorted by maidens must be. Those faces sent a chill down Perrin's spine. Considering. They made him thankful Rand had left all the Aes Sedai behind. Aside from the Aiel, the dragon reborn moved through a river of unconcern that parted for the maidens and closed in again behind the Ashaman. The royal palace of Carrion, the sun palace, the palace of the rising sun in splendor. Carrionin were great ones for names, each more extravagant than the last. Stood atop the highest hill in the city, a dark mass of square stone with stepped towers looming over everything. The street, the Way of the Crown, became a long, broad ramp rising toward the palace, and Perrin drew a deep breath as they started up. Fael was up there. She had to be, and safe. Whatever else, she had to be safe. He touched the knot holding Swallow's reins to a ring on his pommel, stroked the axe at his waist. The horse's shod hooves rang loudly on the paving stones. The maidens made no sound at all. The guards on the great open bronze gates watched their slow approach and exchanged glances. They were colorful for Carrionin soldiers, 10 men with the rising sun in gold on their dark breastplates and scarves in House Saigon's colors tied below the heads of their halberds. Perrin could have written out their thoughts. 13 men on horseback, but in no hurry, and only 2 wearing armor, 1 in Mayenna red. Any trouble would come from Caroline Damodred or Toram Riotan. And Mayenners had no place in that. And there was a woman and an ogier. Surely they intended no trouble. Still, 3 dozen or so maidens trotting ahead of the horses hardly looked as though they were coming for tea. For an instant, all hung balanced. Then a maiden veiled herself. The guards jerked as if goosed, and one slanted his halberd and darted for the gates. 2 steps he took, and stopped, rigid as a statue. Every guard stood stiff. Nothing moved but their heads. Good, Rand murmured. Now tie off the flows and leave them for later. Perrin shrugged uncomfortably. The Ashaman had spread out behind, taking up most of the width of the ramp. They must be using the one power. Very likely, the 8 of them could tear the whole palace apart. Maybe Rand could have by himself. But if those towers began spewing crossbow bolts, they would die with everyone else, caught in the open on this ramp that no longer seemed so wide. Nobody sped up. Any eyes at the tall, narrow windows of the palace, on the colonnaded walks high above, must see nothing out of the ordinary. Sulin flashed maiden hand talk, and the one who had veiled lowered the black cloth hurriedly, face flushing. A slow walk up the stone ramp. Some of the guards' helmeted heads shook wildly, eyes rolling. One seemed to have fainted, slumping upright with his chin on his chest. Their mouths strained, open, but no sound came out. Perrin tried not to think about what had gagged them. A slow walk, through the open bronze gates, into the main courtyard. There were no soldiers here. The stone balconies around the courtyard stood empty. Liveried servants rushed out with downcast eyes to take the horses' reins and hold stirrups. Stripes of red and yellow and silver ran down the sleeves of otherwise dark coats and dresses, and each had the rising sun small on the left breast. That was more color than Perrin had seen on a Carrionin servant before. They could not see the guards outside, and likely would have done little different if they had. In Carrion, servants played their own version of Deus de Mar, the game of houses, but they pretended to ignore the doings of those above them.
taking too much notice of what happened among your betters, or at least being seen to take notice, might mean being caught up in it. In Kyrian, maybe in most lands, ordinary folk could be crushed unnoticed where the mighty walked. A blocky woman led Stepper and Swallow away without really looking at him. Swallow was inside the Sun Palace, and it made no difference. He still did not know whether Fael was alive or dead. A fool boy's fool fancy. Shifting his axe at his hip, he followed Rand up the broad gray stairs at the far end of the courtyard and nodded when Aram reached over his shoulder again to ease his sword. Liveried men swung open the great doors at the head of the stairs, bronze like the outer gates, and marked large with the rising sun of Kyrian. Once, the entry hall would have stunned Perrin with its grandeur. Thick square columns of dark marble held a square vaulted ceiling 10 paces above floor tiles that alternated dark blue and deep gold. Gilded rising suns marched around the cornices, and friezes carved in the walls showed Kyrian in triumphs in battle. The hall was empty, save for a handful of young men clustered beneath one of the friezes who fell silent when Perrin and the rest entered. Not all men, he realized. All wore swords, but 4 of the 7 were women, in coats and snug breeches, much like men's, their hair cut short as the men's. Not that that was particularly short. Men and women alike had it gathered in a kind of tail that reached their shoulders, tied with a dark ribbon. One of the women wore green, a little paler than normal for Kyrianen, and another bright blue. All the rest were in dark colors, with a few bright stripes across their chests. They studied Rand's party, with an especial view for himself, Perrin realized. His yellow eyes took people aback, although he hardly noticed it anymore unless somebody jumped or made a commotion. Studied in silence until the last of the Ashaman was in, and the doors swung shut. The boom of the closing covered a moment of fierce whispering. Then they came swaggering closer, the women strutting even more arrogantly than the men, which took some doing. Even the way they knelt was arrogant. The green-clad woman glanced at the one in blue, who had her head down, and said, "My lord dragon, I am Camille Nolaisen. Salanda Darangil leads our society." She blinked at a fierce look from the woman in blue. Despite the glare, Salanda smelled afraid to her bones, if Perrin was making out who was who properly. Clearing her throat, Camille went on.
"We did not think... we did not expect you to return so soon."
"Yes," Rand said softly. "I doubt anyone thought I would return so soon. None of you has any reason to be afraid of me. None at all. If you believe anything, believe that." Surprisingly, he looked right at Salanda when he said that. Her head whipped up, and as she stared at him, the fear smell faded. Not completely, but down to a tatter. How had Rand known it was there? "Where is Kolaver?" Rand asked. Camille opened her mouth, but it was Salanda who answered.
"In the Grand Hall of the Sun."
Her voice grew stronger as she spoke, the scent of her fear growing weaker. Oddly, a slight tinge of jealousy touched it once, just for an instant, when she glanced at Min. Sometimes his sense of smell was more confusing than enlightening.
"It is the 3rd sunset convocation," she went on. "We are not important enough to attend. Besides, I think we of the societies make her uneasy."
"The 3rd, Dobrain muttered. "The 9th sunset after her coronation already. She wasted no time. At least they will all be together. No one of any rank or pretension will miss it, Kyrianen or Tyran."
Drawing herself up on her knees, Salanda managed to make it seem she was meeting Rand eye to eye.
"We are ready to dance the blades for you, my lord dragon."
Sulin shook her head, wincing, and another maiden groaned audibly. Several looked and smelled ready to do some violence then and there. The Aiel could not decide what to make of these young wetlanders. The problem in Aiel eyes were that they were trying to be Aiel, in a way, to follow Jiato, their version of it anyway. These 7 were not the lot.
Hundreds of the idiots at least could be found all over the city, organized into societies in imitation of the Aiel. Half the Aiel Perrin had heard mention them wanted to help. The other half wanted to strangle them. For himself, he did not care whether they mangled Giotto mincemeat.
"Where is my wife?" he demanded. "Where is Fail?"
The young fools exchanged guarded looks.
"Guarded?"
"She is in the Grand Hall of the Sun," Salanda said slowly. She is one of Queen of Colivere's lady attendants."
"Put your eyes back in your head, Perrin,"
Min whispered.
"She must have a good reason. You know she must."
Shrugging inside his coat, Perrin tried to gather himself.
"One of Colivere's attendants?"
Whatever her reason, it must be good. That much he was sure of. But what could it be? Salanda and the others were passing those guarded looks about again. One of the men, a young fellow with a pointed nose, whispered fierce and low,
"We swore not to tell anyone. Not anyone. On water oath."
Before Perrin could demand to be told, Rand spoke.
"Salanda, lead the way to the Grand Hall. There will be no blades. I am here to see justice done to all who deserve it."
Something in his voice made Perrin's hackles rise. A hardness grim as a hammer's face.
"Fail did have a good reason. She had to."